song. This are the Ragga Twins from North London. Lyrics where you want, you get the one why one. We have so much lyrics, too much to mention. We consulted without preparation. When it comes to style, we have that in abundance. That's why them have to call with the two champions. And the N.I.T. we are the original band. Nobody can say we pirate anyone. When time we come, we have the brand new song. Mash it up, giving up the world place song. Come fi make money, come fi make grand. Don't be put yourself in a top position. You love the Ragga Twins, just hold up your hand. I hold up your hand and sing this a song. Where we step up and make some away step for record. Listen, Ragga Twins, catch up. All in check. Where we step up and make some away step for record. Listen, Ragga Twins, catch up. All in check. Where we step up and make some away step for record. Listen, Ragga Twins, catch up. All in check. Where we step up and make some away step for record. Listen, Ragga Twins, catch up. All in check.
All in check. And coming next on Freak Radio's Santa Cruz is broadcasting on the net, www.freakradio.org. It's the Sunday edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. With your favorite bathrobe, Uncle Robert Norris here. I'm going to be with you for the next 3.5 hours. It's going to be lots of interesting interviews culled from the last few weeks. And the grim but invigorating prospects for the future days ahead. Stay with us, and let's take a leap back with David Lippman now. 20 years back, but not so far back, actually. Take a listen.
The other night when we were out bowling, my buddy says to me, "Hey man, what are you thinking about bowling? Such a sorry sight to see. Now we've got to do what we can about the troubles in Afghanistan. We could bomb the Soviets, but better yet, let's bomb Grenada. They are nationalizing everything. I knew it would be this way. They say if you want to make a profit, a greater tax you must pay. Now we need freedom of investment, just like we've got in Formosa. Maybe we could give Grenada to Merrill Lynch, Pierce Fenner, and Somoza. Let's cut off their aid.
This is Dave Lippman from his 80s album, Shooting from the Lip. I get a bit of my lip here. Maybe you can get a bit of your lip, too, here on the station. I think we may actually have a little musical lip from that man among men, or perhaps we would say bard among bardettes, Uncle Dennis, who's just arrived in the studio. That's another Uncle Dennis, not the the musical Uncle Dennis, who does... Theo Nicho, he says, is what he wishes to be called. And he's going to be interrupting me regularly for the next hour or two. So get used to it. And meekly is, yes. Meekly. He's going to use a number of words I'm going to have to acquaint myself with. In any case, you can join in the jamboree by giving a call to 831-427-3772. That's the local phone number here at Free Radio. We are Free Radio on the net at www.freakradio.org. You can call in. You can also jump on the chat room. Chat room is at www.pagesincolor.com. I'm about to go there myself. I'm going to be talking about a number of things today, plus some specific concerns around police violence in Santa Cruz. I'm only getting fragmentary reports, but it's a hot topic, 33 comments I saw this morning on the Santa Cruz Indie Media website. I refer you to that debate so you can kind of get some background if you want to join in the discussion or orient yourself as to what's cooking. That's, again, the Santa Cruz Indie Media website where lots of local articles are published. You can publish your own article if you don't like what they're saying, and many do. There's a couple individuals identifying themselves as police officers who are responding to concerns about police misconduct, police violence, claiming it's all hogwash, Yeah, that pretty much is what they're saying. Check it out. It's, again, www.santacruz, all one word, small letters, santacruz.indymedia.org. And that's, if you have a computer, check it out. And if you don't, you might not even be listening to us because we only, go out on the net here. Although rumor has it that scoundrels at 101.1 FM, whoever they are, whoever they may be, are actually broadcasting this live. Now, I don't know why they would do such a thing, but what can I say?
I understand that beside the rumor, there's also a check border.
That distant voice in the background is going to no doubt be talking more articulately and perhaps more audibly close to the mic as the morning goes on. But again, the phone number is hopefully shorter sentences. The phone number again is 831-427-3772. If you want to leave me an off-air, or I should say off-net message, you can do that at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's the number for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is one of them wild and crazy groups still around after the election, hopefully stronger than ever. Huffing and puffing, and here's a mic for this man if he wishes to actually be heard. Mike. You know, you're not actually on yet. Now you're on, I think.
Hello, Mike.
I don't know if you're on or not. Say something else.
Hello, Mike. M-U-Y-C-K.
You're not on yet. Hang on. The mic isn't connected. Wait, we'll connect you. I think this is going to do it. I hope this is going to do it. Yeah, that did it. Okay, we actually have liftoff on the second mic. Very good. I think we're going to turn it down a bit.
Hello, Mike.
There you go.
Miguel, ¿cómo estás, pues?
And this, of course, is for those of you who speak Spanish and wish translations, I'm sure that Tio Mio, and what's your
Nicho, Nicho.
Nicho.
N-I-C-H-O, Nicho.
Mr. Nacho
C-H-
here is going to
C-H as in cheese, as in choose, as in chosen.
Who is going to give you an etymological epistle every few minutes to give you kind of the background on words, and more words.
If not an edict.
Perhaps. There is a Santa Cruz shitty council meeting coming up, because even though we did get rid of Kennedy, yes, Mayor Kennedy is gone.
Not that Kennedy, the other Kennedy.
Scott Kennedy, yes. He's gone. He's not gone yet, actually. He'll be gone in a couple weeks. We are still looking at...
Very short lame duck around here, huh?
A pretty grim situation with Mayor Rotkin likely to be the dominant velvet hand behind the iron glove, or whatever they call you. The velvet glove in the iron hand is what it is, actually. Rotkin is a very experienced... I would have to call him a sophist, because he's a man who knows how to talk faster than anyone I know and does a lot of sophistry. However, he's not afraid to come on Free Radio. I will say that for him, unlike his predecessor, Scott Kennedy, who did come on. Kennedy comes on shows where people don't have his record to challenge him, like myself. But he has declined. He has actually offered to come on my show and then six times canceled or left.
He doesn't have the facts to face him. with.
Right, or the inclination. A lot. I'm afraid a number of the Free Radio Santa Cruz Collective, dazzled by Kennedy's support of the collective, for which I give him credit in terms of his willingness to stand up and come when we were raided and sponsor an emergency resolution a year ago supporting Free Radio. Nonetheless, Kennedy is horrible on almost all other issues except international issues. Internationally, you know, he's a supporter of, you know, he opposes the war in Iraq, but he wouldn't know it from his actions at City Council for the last year and a half. And I believe he favors human rights for groups like the Palestinians and others abroad. So that's fine. But what about the local folks here? Well, you know, leave them in the hands of the police, the redevelopment agency, and the downtown association. That seems to be his perspective. So.
I'd like to make a little comment from the meta-political standpoint. I think it's wonderful that here in Santa Cruz, people who are, on the surface, rather antagonistic, can recognize each other's values and help to create a situation here where there really is a certain fellow feeling among antagonists. And let me bring up once again this Nietzschean principle, which is usable at any degree of antagonism. Nietzsche, the great philosopher, philologist, says that we must respect our opponents because they are the ones who allow us to exercise our powers to the utmost.
Sort of the old fascist friend-foe approach. You don't have a...
I didn't see any fascists, did you?
No. I did, but... Nietzsche, of course, was embraced by certain right-wing elements in Germany.
It weren't his fault. They came later,
right,
after he was gone, you know?
Right, that's true. Übermenschen and so forth, but let's...
I was hoping you wouldn't mention that.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm, yeah. Poor punsters all work in the same ruts.
What's so poor about punning? Please, it is the dough of humor. You know, you take the dough, make a pun out of
you
it.
You got the do re mi. You better stay out of the store. That's my suggestion. Anyway, we have a city council meeting coming up, as I was saying earlier, and the city council has changed somewhat. It hasn't changed for this meeting because there's not going to be an actual change. The swearing in, and we might say the swearing at the new city council, will only be happening on November. Let's see, today's the 7th, 9th,
7-11.
9th, and 20th, and 14th. It'll be the 23rd when the new council comes in. And that is, I think they're sworn in the evening, and then the old council retires on its laurels or off to the whatever. And at that point, you can actually, you'll see the lineup, but the lineup, of course, you know already, is going to be the old-timers, Fitzmaurice, Rotkin, and Matthews, who are bad. Fitzmaurice, I suppose, has some redeeming features on some votes, but in terms of homeless issues, he's bad. Although he's asked a couple questions now and then. You know, one has to give the devil her due, so to speak. Anyway, then the new members. Well, the reelected, of course, were Riley and Porter. Bad. But Porter and Riley, I guess, were... Primack and Kennedy were probably worse on most issues, except where they were trying to take what I thought were opportunistic pro-homeless positions in order to embarrass a supposedly progressive council in the early years of the millennium, in 2001, when Camp Paradise was struggling to survive. Kennedy and Primack took a position supporting Camp Paradise briefly, but then abandoned it, of course. Looks like we have a call. Let's see if we actually have a working... deal going on here.
Motorhome. So I was parked down there at the very end, and I was in the bathroom.
Where is Felker Street? I'm sorry, I've heard of it, but I'm not trying to place it.
Down there by Denny's.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay, so anyway, so there's a lot of foot traffic, people coming through there and whatnot, right? It's like a lot of poor people, a lot of the whole street is like pictured. You can picture it as like poor people's area. You know, down at the end, there's a big double two-story complex of apartments, poor people, right, getting the blood money sucked out of them by slumlords.
Mm-hmm.
Real dark and grim and dungy, and I don't think sunlight ever gets in any of those holes of apartments. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I'm down at the very end, and I'm in the bathroom and doing number two, and almost, you know, anyway, so, and somebody bangs on my side door, boom, 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 boom. And I thought, well, the police, but what did I, you know, I haven't done nothing. You know, it's like, this is weird. I park here every now and then. It's like a pit stop type area.
And what time of day is it?
This was 11 o'clock, roughly.
In the day?
in the day. In the
and
morning.
You were legally parked?
Yes.
And you were taking a dump in your own bathroom?
Yes, I was.
Right, okay.
You know, I don't want to paint an ugly picture, but sorry. But
that's so not ugly. Actually, that shows you have some responsibility. You're not out on the streets making small deposits in visible places. So.
Yeah, I had to, anyway. So then the guy goes, are you in there? You're not supposed to be here, something like that. Then he starts walking down to the front, and my dog was protective of his doghouse. I call my motorhome my doghouse. You know, he owns it, you know, got to be honest. So anyway, he goes, well, I don't know if you're in there, but I'm going to report you to the police, something like that. And then he starts pounding from the front end of the vehicle, clear back to the far end of the vehicle. I'm just starting to wipe up to try to get ready, right? I have to wash up, da-da-da-da-da. I eventually get out there, and he's gone. Evidently was driving a vehicle, so there's no license plate to get. What do?
Okay, well, first of all, my advice in this sort of situation is, depends, of course, on whether you feel there's a threat of violence. If you feel there's a threat of violence, it sounds like you have a cellular phone.
Yeah, pounding on my vehicle.
It's obviously good to have, if you know anybody who, it's good to have friendly relations with some housed people nearby so you can get in touch with them, particularly if they live nearby. But if you can't do that.
Carl lives down Midway.
Right, you might get in touch with him and ask him to come on out, preferably with a camera and tape recorder. That's always helpful and tends to deter this kind of vigilante activity. They get a little nervous when they, you know, when you shine the light on the cockroaches, they start to run the other way. But I also have to say that, you know, some people have legitimate concerns, and sometimes they go off because they feel they aren't being listened to. I mean, nobody listens to the community at the governmental level, really. So they come and we turn against each other. That's the problem. So, you know, if you can, the first thing to do is to try to address this person's issues. If you can, you know, we might come out of your van and say, hi, what's the problem? And you say, I don't want you here. You say, well, you know, I'm parked legally on a public street. What's the problem? Why don't you want me here? What, has there been some other problem in the area? How can I help you? You're stealing all my stuff, you know, or, you know, you're crapping over my yard. Hypodermic needles are being left on my roof, whatever. I mean, I'm not saying some of these aren't real, valid, and in fact, factual concerns. Well, you have to say, look, if it is you, you might want to acknowledge it and say, I'm moving elsewhere, or, you know, whatever you would do. But if it isn't you, and most of the time, I think for you, I'm pretty sure, I know you personally, I don't think it's you. You say, look, this isn't me. You know, I don't want to have to justify my situation to you, and I don't really have to, but I am concerned. If you'd like me to keep an eye out for people who, you know, for criminal behavior that's real criminal behavior. I'm not talking about joining in some vendetta with the police against homeless people. I'm talking about, you know, people who are actually, you know, destroying property, assaulting other people, causing a health hazard by leaving needles in the street or whatever if they're doing it. I've actually never seen a needle in the street. I guess there have been needles.
I've never seen one.
Right, but I mean, you know, there are examples of needles being left in places that are inappropriate. We do have needle distribution centers. Obviously, we need some more literature letting people know where all that is, though presumably, I don't know. You know, I can't say how widespread the information is. In other words, find out what the situation is. I also have my mentor here, Bard Dennis, will give you his El Nacho is going to give you the story.
Nacho.
I like to think of you as Nacho, but Nacho, yes.
Nacho, was, in my myth, is Don Ignacio de Loyola.
Don't even get into it. Just answer his question.
Well, I'm just going to throw in a monkey wrench into the works here, and just to provide some counter ballast to this conversation. When I walk over the wooded headlands around Davenport, California, up the coast, I occasionally find not needles, but, are you ready for this? Golf tees.
Are you kidding?
I want to juxtapose that with the needles.
You
that you're
criminal golfers on the...
Well, think about it. There are also plenty of balls around there, and the whole neighborhood all around up in there in those woodlands and hills, you know, there's people driving golf balls all over the place, you know, they're all over the place.
Well, that's interesting and actually kind of, you know, a refreshing side note on it. But what do you think, caller, of my suggestion?
I think it's good. I have this thing, and it's like, how I have a personality that thinks, how dare somebody put their hands on another put their hands on another person's vehicle. I see it almost as intimidation. It's assault. I see it as like putting my, if I was to put my hands on somebody's vehicle, I better be prepared to suffer the repercussions.
Well, I know.
I think, well, to do it the right way, you know, it's like I said, I went out. He was gone. He evidently drove off. He was going to notify the police, and I was hoping that they'd come, right? And I would think, well, next time just call them, dial 911, and get everybody there and get it all straightened out that way, the right way.
You can take a more aggressive approach, too. I mean, I think it's good to be reasonable to a person, but if the person obviously, there's some people who are part of actually vigilante squads, like Lieutenant Habe.
That was the feel of it. That was the vibe.
And if that's the case, the best thing to do is to get yourself a little camera, preferably with a flash.
Camera so we can see the golf tee that I'm
and
holding.
And Dennis is holding up a golf tee, which has absolutely no relevance to your situation, but is no doubt humorous in the minds of some. Yes, but what I'm saying is having a camera is helpful, and it's also helpful to have a tape recorder. And, of course, if you can, you obviously want to get the license plate of the car. What you can say to the man is, very simply, leave me alone. Or say, who the hell do you think you are? Keep your hands off my vehicle. Step away from the vehicle. Don't ever come back here. Or hold it. I'm making a citizen's arrest on you for disturbing the peace and harassing me. Don't leave. If you do, I'll convey your license plate number to a police officer who will be here within the hour. You can park your car over there, buddy, and wait. If you want to do that, you could do that. Now, admittedly, you know, this will set you up for the police officer doesn't have to take your citizen's arrest, but you have the right to make one. And the fact that he doesn't take it is an example of discriminatory practice by the Santa Cruz Police Department, where, well, you know, if you're a merchant, you get your arrest taken of the homeless person.
I live in my vehicle, so they're not going to listen to me.
Yeah, but you see, if you do that, the guy who is driving by doesn't know that. And also, there are some police officers who will listen to you. I'm not saying.
I don't think so.
Well, let me put it this way. I think that a police officer is obliged to listen to a citizen arrest. He doesn't have to write it down, but he has to listen to it. If he does not take your report, your next step is, and I was going to announce this on the air, not that it's terribly effective, but you know, we are getting increasing reports of police violence. And police neglect is not police violence, but it is a form of discrimination that encourages violence by others, particularly because what's being done to you is a form of violence.
Yeah.
That person it's like he came to your house and started whamming on your front door with an iron rod or something, saying, get out of this neighborhood, man. We don't want you niggers around here.
Right.
You know, if he says that, I mean, it's sort of that's what it is. In fact, it's a form of hate crime, is what it is.
Being molested, you know, and it's like out of the blue with somebody banging, you know, and I just think, how could somebody go across the street and molest somebody like that?
Well, people think it is socially acceptable, just like it was okay to lynch, you know, the darker people in the old days. And they would have actual parties where kids would, you know, eat weenies and, you know, eat candy and take photos and have photo opportunities. You've seen that in the old papers.
Robert.
What?
That's after they went to church.
Yeah, I mean, it was a public celebration, and it was and so this sort of stuff it hasn't reached that level here in Santa Cruz, as far as I know. But there is this right wing undercurrent that is just strong and dark and malevolent and supported by police organizing as well as by organizing by different downtown associations. And I think that it needs to be challenged, and I think that there are several ways to challenge it. If you can, there's the low key way, saying, look, let's work together. If you've got a problem, let's talk about it. And I got no problem with that. But if they are being systematically abusive, then you simply say, hold it, you're under arrest. Don't leave the scene, or I will also add an additional charge fleeing the scene. So you do what you want, buddy. I got your license number. I'm calling the cops. You can either wait here or you can leave. But whatever you do, don't leave and then come back later and do this again, please, because that, you know, that would be a repetition of the crime. I think it's a serious problem. And I mean, there are those, for example, in the 60s, in the 50s, they formed self-defense organizations with black people in the South. In the 60s, of course, you had the Black Panthers here, and the Brown Berets are doing it in Watsonville now. I think you have to get together with other vehicle dwellers. I know that's like, you know, as they say, herding cats, but nonetheless, you got to do it. You got to get together with other vehicle doors and say, have they been banging on your van lately? And, you know, we saw this happening at Buffalo. Doug and Marilyn McGrath talked about it a year ago. Lieutenant Habe, I remember he was even deputy chief or vice chief Habe, was behind it on the west side. And it's
–
go ahead.
I know, earlier this week there was a couple other vehicles there. And I noticed yesterday, after the fact, after this happened, it's all like barren. Everything's been cleaned out, it appears to be. So So I don't know if they've cleaned people out of there, and that's where this guy was coming from, or what.
So well, it's not, the, could be.
The you information know. You gave me, I appreciate it. It's valuable.
Right.
And I don't want to do anything weird. You know, my manhood is insulted by something like that, and I feel like I got all this chatter in my head. I should, you know, nobody should do this. Nobody should molest another like this, and da-da-da-da-da. And you know, it was just like, it's kind of a form of helplessness. Because, like I said, the manhood thing kicks in. It's like, how dare somebody
well, it's,
do
it's
that?
It's like being a Jew in Nazi Germany coming home and finding the windows of your shop broken and swastikas all over your shop and Jew get lost on the shop door. You know, it's what it is.
Yeah.
Only it's not as overt and it's not as officially sanctioned. Dennis has a comment.
No, this is something I want to throw in while I'm thinking of it. Talk about broken things. Last night, as I walked up the west side of Pacific, I noticed two broken flower pots in front of the place called Heat, it's called. It's a hairstyling salon.
Where is it?
On Pacific, next to the Thomas, the painter guy.
Two
doors away from the Taqueria Vallarta, moving northbound on the west side of Pacific. There, two big flower pots were busted. You know, the red clay pieces were there, and the plants were falling out in the dirt. I don't know what caused that, but there it was last night. It hadn't been cleaned up by maybe 12:30.
Well, those who some expressed anger about the call. Is that kind of cover it, caller? Do you
yes,
want to talk
Robert,
more?
I want to thank you for that. That's an intelligent, the right thing to do, and I'll get my camera ready and everything. It'll be fine.
Also, you know me. I'm also interested in seeing vehicle dwellers somehow get together. So if you see other vehicle dwellers in the course of your travels, okay. Ask them if they've had similar experiences. And, you know, we've talked about homes on wheels forming numerous times, chapters
right.
have formed, but then, of course, they don't seem to go anywhere. But,
right.
you know, people need to get together and defend each other, even if they don't, you know, want to do so with any kind of official high-profile thing. Make it a low-profile thing, you know.
Okay, Robert. Thank you.
Just a thought.
It.
Okay. Bye-bye. Right. Lines are open, 831-427-3772.
Well, I have this golf tee still.
Oh, God. Yes, go ahead.
Who?
Golf on.
Me. Well, I actually did find this out on the headland right in among my favorite Monterey cypress grove out just beyond Davenport, California, 95017, population 375, elevation 80. And it's emblematic or representative, I think, indexical, that is the best semiotic term, I think, indexical to an activity that is taking place all around those hills, as I say. You know, there's a lot of people who play golf up there, but they don't go to golf courses. They just start out a little ways from home and drive their balls out into the redwoods or whatever is planted there. You know, and I used to walk across those pastures, often it is a pasture area that they're driving, I'd find gobs and gobs of golf balls, and I made a little sculpture made of found materials. I lodged a number of those golf balls into a big chambered rock that I found, you know, a big hunk of rock that had holes in it and everything, so I put those in there. And so that was a sculpture made of rock and golf balls.
Sounds,
well, that's why I'm here.
Sounds a little far afield.
That's why I come to your radio show, to bring you additional manifestations of art and music and humor.
Uh-huh.
And all those things that bards
can
provide.
Within limits, such things are always appreciated.
You are the constraining force, if not restraining.
Ineffectual constraining force, apparently.
Yeah.
I'm mentioning that the city council does have a meeting coming up on the Tuesday that follows tomorrow, Monday. However, we'll be talking about that as soon as this person gets her say. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Dennis and Robert.
Hey, Robert. This is Skidmark. How's it going?
Hey, good. How you doing, Skidmark?
I'm doing all right. I was listening to your guest there talk about golf balls being... in the forest. It sounds like an environmental issue to me.
Uh-huh.
Probably those same golfers are out there, the ones hassling the folks in their cars because they're rich enough to spend a whole day doing 18 holes. So probably a lot of those same folks are harassing those folks.
That's been a concern of mine, too. I see the Pogonip Clubhouse improvements, $1 million on the city council agenda at different times. I don't think it's on the Tuesday agenda. But, you know, it's the disproportionate interest in capital outlay or even just supporting some sort of system of capital outlay for others, whereas a complete ignoring of the winter shelter emergency, which needs a campground, car park, suspension of the sleeping and camping bans, to me is just dare I say, sickening.
I was just heard your mess or that last caller, who I've had those type of experiences too, and I was just curious. Why is it so hard for folks just to hook up and try to unionize around, say, like the Homes on Wheels thing you were saying? Is it because people are in and out of town so much?
Part of it is that, you know, there is a general belief, it's not just a mythology, there's some truth to it, that if you maintain a low profile, you're less likely to be harassed by the police.
Exactly.
And, you know, I mean, that was true in the South. That was the argument used against civil rights activists who wanted to register voters. There's also the problem of, are you actually going to get anywhere with your organizing?
Right.
Then there's the problem of, you know, am I, if I'm involved in it, to be the person to be organizing because of my, quote, notorious reputation? Some people feel that. I don't particularly think that's true. I can think of other people far more notorious. The infamous cop watcher, for example, Skidmark Bob Duran, is well known and much detested by the community.
I mean, FCC watcher.
a notorious. We're still trying to get photos of you and the tires and the SCC.
Hey, don't even go there.
I won't even think about that.
But,
by the way, there's a good story on the FCC bust on the front pages of Street Spirit, admittedly about a month late.
Oh, wow.
But it's in this issue, the November issue of Street Spirit, the newspaper sold for poor and homeless people, which I'm actually about to hand Dennis. But the answer to your question is it's been done. I mean, they actually have gotten vehicle dwellers together in Santa Barbara, and for a while it was done in San Francisco. It was called the Vehicular Residents Association up north, and it was done under the auspices of the Coalition on Homelessness, which puts out Street Sheet. And they actually met regularly. They may even still meet, and they were trying to had proposals for then-Governor, then-Mayor Brown, who didn't really do too much with them. And they failed to get a federal grant. They were going to set up some streets where they could have some facilities where vans could hook up and, you know, hang out and be less, actually, the problem with establishing intense concentrations of vehicles is they become a target. They become a ghetto. But I think it's good still to have vehicular kind of places where people can go. Eugene, under pressure, passed the law that allows sort of that set up city public three vehicles per public area, parking areas for some vehicles. Didn't nearly meet the need,
right.
But it was a beginning.
Well, all the campgrounds, you have to have, you know, reservations at least a year or not a few months ahead.
And there's
of time.
A Santa Cruz law or a Santa Cruz interpretation of the state law, which says not only can you only spend 2 weeks in a campground and leave, and you can, and not only can you spend no more than 1 month in a campground per year total, but Santa Cruz interprets it so you can't spend a month.
Depends on how long your RV is. And how new it is.
That could be. And we also, of course, you know, we've seen the Lighthouse Field restriping discriminatory activities up there in the last 4 or 5 months. Sherry Connable has been doing some actual work on that. She noticed it a bit late, but she's been getting on the stick trying to get Emily Riley and Ed Porter, who are the two council members, reelected, and she was doing this before they were reelected, to do something to address why our city is saying, you know, camper vehicles, not only can't you sleep in your vehicle at night, not only can't you park your vehicle at night because of the permit parking and because of the merchant-funded no parking between 12 and 6 a.m. signs in different places, but you can't even park your vehicle during the day in light of, I mean, this is creeping gentrification of the town, as you know.
I have a comment. You know, am I on camera here? When I was growing up as a teenager in the San Fernando Valley part of California down in Los Angeles, what we would call this is really chicken shit on the part of the city council or whoever was responsible for relying.
The city staff. The council hides out. They don't
even
come
to them. Whoever put those lines narrower, you know, that is a clear discrimination. You know, if it was different earlier, you know, and still was accommodating, then it is clear discrimination against people with wider vehicles.
I had one more quick question. I'll hang up and let other folks call in.
Okay.
Just your view on the two new ones, Madrigal and Coonerty Jr.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Robert.
Hey, thanks for calling in. Bye-bye.
I came up with a two-line poem as you were talking there. You
know, I hope it's about Madrigal and
It has to do with gals, yeah. Vehicular hickeys. Two-word poem from the Bard of Hollywood. Thank you very much.
Yes,
I'm still here.
Mm-hmm. He's not paying for the airtime, folks, though perhaps he should be. We don't know. In any case...
I tell you, Robert, I have prepaid for this airtime. I would like
and
to...
And now we all get to pay, I see.
Yeah, right. This is...
But the question that the caller had was, what do I think of Riley and... not Riley. Madrigal and Coonerty. You should always give new council members an opportunity to prove themselves. On the other hand, I took positions on these people before they were on the council, and I talked about it. And actually, we had a discussion about this last week. Steve Argue and Ray Glock-Grunijk were in the studio.
I
believe that was last Sunday they were in the studio.
Exactly, right before the election.
And, yeah, they talked about the propositions. But and I guess my position was that, first of all, get the incumbents out. Dump the damn incumbents. If you have to vote for Mark Fogel, who seems to be a nice enough guy, then vote for him. But Steve Argue's position was just vote for Coral Brune and Robert Norris, the two candidates who actually, me and Coral, who had positions that were, I think, more in keeping with those who are on the progressively minded, if you will, around issues of rent control, community control, police, you know, that sort of thing. The sleeping ban, laws that criminalize the poor, U.S. out of Iraq now, support-type resolutions and actions by the city council. So there were two different schools of thought. I guess one way to vote them out is not to vote for the existing city council and then just only vote for the candidates you want, which makes sense. I think it also makes sense to vote for the an alternate slate just to get these damn guys out. If you'll forgive my cursing, even if you won't. In any case, they're out. And what we got now, Madrigal, actually, I saw him yesterday, and I've invited him on the air today. I got a feeling, and I hope I'm wrong, that Madrigal is going to be a slippery character, that he's going to be he seemed to be closely connected and running around with, you know, I'm tempted to use phrases like greasing the ass of those in power. Tony, if you're listening to this, I got to tell you, I don't know what you're going to do. And I really hope you follow, start looking into things like rent control, community control of police. You said you would be open to putting the sleeping ban on the agenda. And you said that twice at two different forums, and that's good, you know. But talk is one thing and action is another. I've never seen you involved in campaigns to end the sleeping ban, as literally thousands of Santa Cruzans have been at one level or another in the last 5 to 10 years. I also know that you are closely involved with the Dolphin Lee Project, the Nueva Vista Project in the Beach Flats, which essentially tied up all the redevelopment money for affordable housing for, what is it, 15 years, 20 years, for a pet project of Catherine Byers and Mercy Housing that destroyed more units than it created. And should have, you know, it should have been built on vacant land, and they should have, you know, remodeled existing. If they really wanted affordable housing, it destroyed a Latino community down there. It created a new, you know, a new perk for those who are Mercy Housing, you know, went to Mercy Housing and did such a wonderful job at Neary Lagoon and elsewhere. And I'm being sarcastic. I've heard many criticisms of that, but you know, so obviously I'm not terribly optimistic about Tony Madrigal. But is Tony Madrigal better than Scott Kennedy? No question about it. Scott Kennedy has such a bad track record and such a powerful negative record. It's certainly better to have a Madrigal on than Kennedy. Coonerty, it's hard to tell. Coonerty was civil enough to me, although he refused to come on the show, claiming I'd offended him and his mother in a debate or an encounter I had with him on the sidewalk 10 years ago when his father, Neil Coonerty, was a member of the city council and previously the mayor and the big backer of the downtown ordinances. So he was quick in his email responses. He was responsive. If he's that's one thing that, for example, Kennedy was erratic on. Kennedy was not. He'd get sarcastic with you. He wouldn't respond to your emails. He would address you at city council. So maybe Coonerty, he's a new council member. Maybe he could be better. My concerns about him are he's closely connected with the downtown association, I suspect. I mean, he's the son of a merchant. I'm not sure what his business is himself. And I welcome having him on the show if he wants to talk about his program. My litmus test for people is human rights activities in Santa Cruz and how they deal with poor people here. And obviously the first issue of the winter is to make sure people don't freeze their asses off are getting situations they can get beaten up or harassed by vigilantes, as this last caller was. And that way to do that, obviously, is to allow homeless people to sleep in protective groups, like at Camp Paradise was, though admittedly not such a wonderful place in many respects under the authoritarian and somewhat corrupt hand of Larry Templeton. That was my final understanding of that situation. But still, this was a homeless-run encampment. And I think that needs to be addressed fast. In fact, I'm hoping, as I mentioned in the last show, that the threat of a real federal lawsuit around the sleeping ban and the reality that throughout the summer there's been no shelter available, no shelter beds have been open, period. There were 39 spaces every night that were always filled up, and there were 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people out there on the street, and yet there were about, according to, I believe it's according to Rodkin or Kennedy, a 50 sleeping ban tickets per month. Clearly, if you give someone a ticket and you know they have no place to go, this amounts to a pattern of harassment. It really does. And the rationales used for this by Rodkin are many, and you'll hear them as he enters what I assume will be his mayorship, and I could be wrong about that. I thought Kennedy was going to get reelected. I was really sure about that, and I was wrong, thank God. And I also thought Primack was probably going to get reelected, and I was pretty sure Porter was out. And I have no love for Porter because he gave us the most recent version of the downtown ordinances, move along every hour or else don't have a ball downtown. No balls, Porter is what he earned that sobriquet. But he also is, in many respects, as I've told him directly, the best of the worst on the city, on the old city council. He stood up for the De Anza tenants. He has requested staff reports at different times when other people have been silent. I'm trying to think of other things he's done, and I can't immediately think of them, but he's been on the 6-1 end of some votes, and that's been good. I'm more often criticizing him for breaking his commitments to scan on the Greens to put the sleeping ban on the agenda when he was elected in 2000, when I think he made one feeble attempt with Fitzmaurice when Fitzmaurice, our Green Party mayor, was in power, and he's still on the council, of course. And Fitzmaurice cut it off, but it was up to Porter to keep trying, and Porter didn't, saying, "Oh, I don't have a second." Well, you don't have to have a second to put something on the agenda. You just don't. You keep your commitments. And so anyway, I've belabored that a lot. But, you know, this is winter coming up. And we need some protection for people from police violence, from vigilante violence, from the violence of the elements, from the violence that comes with, you know, age and illness and homelessness. And it's just important that people be allowed to support each other. And that's why we need places where people can camp together, places where people can park their vehicles together, places where people can share their wares and their goods and their artwork. All these things are important. That's what makes a community. And hopefully, well, no, I'm not going to say hopefully it's going to happen. It ain't going to happen unless we make it happen. The alternate, the other thing will happen. They will drive us out of town. They will drive us underground. They will create new and worse regulations. So that's the long answer, the question about Coonerty and Madrigal. The real answer is I'm not optimistic, but who knows? I could be surprised. You know, surprise me, Tony. And as for you, Ryan Coonerty, surprise me. And Ed Porter, now you have the potential second vote. Get off your ass. Put the sleeping ban on the agenda. We invited Ed to come on this show. He refused. Ed feels that some miscreant made a loop tape, or as I understand it, I'm not quite sure exactly what he was talking about, but he felt an interview with him, I think at Catherine Byers' party for Emily Riley when she was running in 2000. And somebody picked up my interview and turned it into a mocking loop tape, and he held me accountable and not only would never be interviewed again, but he had me arrested in November of 2002 at a public meeting in the city council office building where the city manager's room where we were all talking about laws about regulating musicians because I was tape recording it and doing so openly, which was legal, and he misused his power there. And it's never been held to account for it. And it's never apologized for it. And still feels he did the right thing. So there's problems. Real problems. City Council meeting is coming up on Tuesday. What have we got coming up? I just took a quick look at it. There's no evening session. And oral communications will be in the morning. In the afternoon. There's an afternoon session. It starts at 3 o'clock. And I'm actually going to get onto the website and take a look at the Santa Cruz City Council specifics as to when you can, if you want to go on Tuesday to speak before the community television and the City Council, you can do that. And looking at the agenda here, let's see what we got. It's 2 p.m. They're going to start. There's a closed meeting starts at 2. The open meeting starts at 3. And what's Kennedy doing? Where is he putting oral communications? I'm looking for oral communications. Oral communications at the beginning of the 3 o'clock session. So there's no funny business by Kennedy at his final substantive meeting. He'll actually have another meeting 2 weeks after this, but that meeting will be mainly for the purpose. I think that's going to be an afternoon session. It'll be substantive, and then the evening he turns things over to the new City Council, if I'm not mistaken. So, what's happening on this agenda in 2 days? I noticed there are two women with complaints about police misconduct that they have made claims to the city. Now, that's what you do if you feel a police officer has injured, abused, harassed you, and you feel there's damages due you from the city, financial damages or some kind of recompense. You file a claim against the city. And the claim against the city involves simply a very simple form. You go into the city clerk and you fill it out. You have to do it within 6 months after the incident, or you can't take a state action. You can take a federal action within 2 years after the incident even if you don't file a claim, but that's more complicated, costs more money, and actually probably has more chance of succeeding. My recent lawsuit against Sergeant Baker, which won, it wasn't taken to court, but it was settled out of court successfully for $5,000, $2,500 to the attorneys, for being on the sidewalk with a table, and then Sergeant Baker and a private merchant, Matisse Selman of Sushi Now, colluded to have me arrested for having the table on the sidewalk. I was calling for a boycott of his business. He didn't like that. They claimed I was obstructing the sidewalk. Anyway, so you can file claims against the city. That's what's happening at the City Council as a first order of business. If I get to that City Council meeting, and I probably will at 3 o'clock, I'll be talking about that. And that actually, I believe that actually happens after oral communications. But let me mention what's happening at that. I'm trying to get the two women who have concerns, Rosalind Clark and Jill Radovich, their names are on the public record, to call in. Ask my producer to try to get a hold of them, so who knows, maybe we can get them to call in. Although sometimes people are scared if they feel they've been abused by the police, and in fact, frequently they are, and they don't want to call in. But here's a caller. Let's see who's calling in now. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert and Dennis. We're on the Internet. We have no truck with the radio. There's some scoundrels who are broadcasting us independently, and they are, of course, causing a delay. So blame them. Don't blame us.
How is Free Radio like the U.S. Senate? There's a delay.
Hang on a second. Caller, go ahead.
How many votes did you get, Robert?
I got the grand total of, I think it was 232 votes shared with Coral Bruin. So I suspect I got about 115 votes.
Yeah. I see.
That was quite a mandate, actually. I think I'm calling for a recount because I think it was somewhat fraudulent. There must have been several thousand votes that were thrown away, but you know how it is these days.
Well, I will listen in until you're out of range.
All right. Well, thank you.
Take care.
All right. And I always appreciate a loyal listener and a man who has done his share is trying to fight for rent control in this community. Hopefully he will pick up the cudgels again. We need it now more than ever, and we'll see how that goes. If you want to call in, the phone number is 427-3772. We were talking about the upcoming City Council meeting, and I was hoping that the two people who were making claims against the City Council for police misconduct tell us more about those claims. Let's see what else we got here. Looking at the City Council, Well, the first thing there is half an hour of oral communication. So if you want to say something to the community, they'll let you talk for 3 minutes. And actually, I'm going to play an example of oral communication shortly so you can actually hear, for those of you newcomers who don't know what that is, that's the public comment period of City Council where they say, let everybody sound off who wants to sound off. They ignore us often, frequently, particularly those of us who come back repeatedly and try to raise issues that they don't want to address. But sometimes we annoy them enough that they have to respond, or they feel they do. Here's a caller. Hi, caller.
Hi there. This is Ranger Gene calling from Santa Cruz.
Ranger Gene, excellent. Good to hear you, Ranger Gene.
I think Robert will recognize me.
Well, I might, but right now I don't. I'm still trying to, get the wax out of my ears.
Well, Ranger Gene and Silver Knight from Wham.
Oh, wait a minute. Yes, sir. What?
I'm not calling from Wham. That's where you probably know me.
Okay.
And I had a similar experience at the beach. I was given a $200 ticket for failing to litter. I found a beer bottle and I was going to throw it away, and the cop rushed up and gave me a ticket without even asking. The main issue was I was setting up musical equipment to play out there at the beach, and they don't really have a rule against that, but anything they can come up with to suppress it works.
When did this happen, Ranger Jane?
I have the ticket around here. In the middle of the summer, it was several months ago.
What did you do with the ticket?
I went to the judge and tried to explain my case.
This was the referee, Kim Baskett?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, always disqualify her, please. Anybody listening, 170.6 CCP is the magic number, 170.6 CCP. You go to the window of the county building, you say, I believe referee Baskett to be prejudiced, 170.6 CCP,
mm-hmm.
and you have it transferred to another court. Not that they'll do a lot better, but Baskett is now systematically, or rather, there are so many cases now I've heard where she has been either unfair, rude, abusive, and simply unable to inform people of their rights.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, what was your experience?
I presented my position, and it was a $204, I think. And she said, okay, we'll reduce it to $170.
How big of her?
Yeah. But as it turned out, the irony of it was that I was allowed to have a court referral, and so the court referral is to go and volunteer. And
you volunteered for WAM.
I volunteer at the Diversity Center, so I just flipped that information over and said, okay, I'm doing this, which I had been doing anyway,
uh-huh.
to pay my bill.
That's
but
good.
I think it's an outrageous fine.
Right.
Yes.
$200 for failing to litter. You know, if I had just thrown it from me, I would have got a litter ticket, which was less. But
what was your actual crime?
Possession of an open container of alcohol. You know, a beer bottle.
What was her response when you said you were trying to throw it away?
No response. You know,
she
I
just
said, I picked this up and I had it in my my stuff because I was setting up my speakers, and when I looked up, there was a quote ranger there who looked like a SWAT team guy.
How so?
Very militant, you know, like they weren't camo coveralls, but they were dark green coveralls, big pistol belt, and you know, the baton, and wearing a bicycle helmet and sunglasses.
And sunglasses.
He really looked like right out of the movie, you know.
RoboCop.
Yeah, yeah.
What was his name?
Absolutely rude and cold and a little bit foolish because he came up, you know, blustering, all right, I'm writing you up. I go, what did I do? You just wait there. Wouldn't even tell me what was going on. And then once he had written, and when he went to write the ticket, he sat down on the bench with his back to me, you know, sitting there writing away. Had I been, you know, had I acted on how I felt, he might have been very much in danger. It was a very foolish. Ranger Gene, I used to be a state park ranger in California.
Huh.
And I also used to be a military policeman in the Army. Wow. And so I have a bit of background
experience
in enforcement. And the thing with laws of this sort, you know, that are designed to discourage people from having alcohol at the beach, the concept is, if you're a problem, give them a ticket. If they're not a problem, you give them a warning, even a verbal warning, and say, that's against the rules. Oh, didn't know that. Okay, excuse me, sir, I won't do it anymore. That's fine. That saves everyone time and money and gets the job done. Someone says, hey, what do you mean? This is bullshit. I've been doing this for 50 years. Fuck you. You write them a ticket, maybe handcuff them, maybe take them in. But it has to be, you know, you have to look at the attitude check.
Well, it could
and
be.
And he never even gave me an opportunity. It was like he came up there, oh boy, here's $200 for the county.
Exactly.
Never mind what you've got to say. And so I was rather irritated, but I didn't lose my my center. I was very, very polite, almost too polite to begin with, and then when it became obvious that he was not going to even listen to me, I shut up and just had a little bit of an attitude, but I didn't do anything belligerent.
Dennis has a comment.
Oh, this is a very serious thing on my part. I'm not joking around right now, if you can believe it. I recently had exposure to this kind of enforcement myself, not with regard to open container in a public place, but in my own vehicle. And I went and then read carefully the actual letter of the law, as they say, the actual wording in the law that fit my particular infraction. And I expect the language is fairly equivalent, parallel, or virtually the same in whatever law you were cited under. But what the language says, and it's fairly clear from the language what is intended by the legislators, what it says, and I'll quote you fairly closely on both counts, it talks about bottles being partially emptied of their alcoholic contents, so that's how it's, or containing alcoholic beverages. So it says both containing an alcoholic beverage or partially emptied of its contents. Now, partially implies not totally, you
mm-hmm.
see, and containing alcoholic beverage means not empty. So it's pretty clear on the face of it that legislators meant this not to apply to empty bottles. And so it has to do, you see, it hinges on where we define empty.
Mm-hmm.
And the cops, of course, are willing to go with trace elements of alcohol in there.
That's exactly the same.
And I think that's absurd. This is another chicken shit kind of attitude of enforcement, you know, in this case. You know, I say, well, you know, my goodness, it's empty. You know, I'm done with the thing, and I decided so because if it still had anything in it, I would have drunk it, by the way. You know what I mean?
Ranger Gene, what do you got to say?
Yes, sir. I feel that the infraction had nothing to do with the enforcement. He had driven by several times as my friends and I were setting up to play basically acoustic music, but I had a little PA that I brought along.
Where was this?
Right there on the first parking lot after the lighthouse on the way to Natural Bridges. You know, it has a gate, and that's the key. I had no idea that if it's a gate, it becomes a state park or a county park.
Uh-huh.
And that's what he told me as he's writing up the ticket. You see that gate? That means you're in a park. I went, park? I'm in a parking lot. What are you talking about? And but he, as I say, was not communicative.
What time of day was it?
Midday, one-ish.
You know, I mean, I think you hit it just perfectly right when you said that he was engaged in collecting fines for the city. That's what the referee Kim Baskett does too.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's you know, the way to deal with it. I mean, I don't want to give people the illusion that if you muster all your legal guns and go to a different judge, that you're going to be treated necessarily better. I think it's a good thing to do anyway if you have the time. The problem is it takes time. But it also, you probably found that when you went to do your community service, they charged you money to do it, right?
That's true, yeah.
$20, $25 to $50 and sometimes more.
$35 it was, yeah.
And, you know, this is community. If you're poor, they told me that sometimes they will take away half of the cost if you then, you know, do tasks for them around the office, that sort of thing. A little indentured servitude there. And, you know, I actually appreciate the community service system because it means
I do too. I would have been in desperate straits.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have $200 to just come out of the air with. I would have been a bill that I was supposed to pay that month.
Well, see, your kind isn't supposed to be around town. They want to give tickets to the wealthier kind.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So that's your problem. It's not your fault that you're poor. It's just you shouldn't be in Santa Cruz. As one of our callers might have said, you know, if you can't afford the rent, go to Fresno.
Yeah.
A hole in the ocean will never be missed.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, and I want to also say thank you very much for being back on the air. I missed it desperately when you were gone. I listen every day. I appreciate what you're doing. It's a fantastic job. Keep up the good work.
Hey, thanks, Ranger Gene. And also, I hope you can get WHAM and other medical marijuana activists to do something to actually reopen distribution centers in Santa Cruz, which have been closed for 4 years.
We'd love to see it. I was involved in the original Maple Street distribution center that was even before the one in San Francisco.
Right. If you can only get the corrals to, you know, realize that they're not the only game in town, that we need to, that though they may well serve 250 to 300 people, their actions in not standing up to the city council and actually colluding with the city council behind closed doors to create the current zoning ordinance penalizes 2,500 to 3,000 people who need medical marijuana.
Well, I hear what you're saying. I don't necessarily agree with all of it, but I certainly agree with the intent that we need to get beyond this marijuana prohibition altogether.
I appreciate that.
Initially, it's an absurdity to have a medicine which doctors are not allowed to prescribe, which is less harmful than 70-80% of the medicine out there. Probably more than that, but I'm sure 70-80% of the medicines out there are far more dangerous than marijuana. But it's a political issue. You know, they've spent so much time demonizing it, and it's very hard for them to backtrack and go, well, maybe it wasn't the devil. It's just like a demon or something, and we'll try to get over it.
Well, the city council has stood up and said, you know, they've said, we're going to distribute medical marijuana, and they did this fancy distribution. Well, I'm sure you were there.
I was doing the sound, and I got videotape of it, too.
Right, but, I mean, at the same time, the corrals told other medical marijuana distributors to stay away from the event.
Mm-hmm.
And they have, for the last 4 years, maintained that position. And you know, and the reason I single out the corrals is because they do have such power. Marty Wormhout comes out on the stage and backs their play, and we all should on the federal issues, no question about it. But locally, it's like Kennedy. You know, Kennedy is great on international issues, but locally, he really sucks. And
a point to ponder.
Yeah.
That what WHAM is experiencing is an overload. You know, that we're basically have more people than we know what to do with.
Right.
Now. And it's only a couple hundred. It's a grassroots organization,
right,
run by, you know, regular folks. And the point that we put out so often is, you don't have to be part of WHAM. You could start your own, or you don't even have to start your own. All these laws apply to individuals in California and Santa Cruz County.
If you can afford to grow your own. See, that's the problem. A lot of people can't, and it's also dangerous to grow your own.
Absolutely. More than just the police, the neighbors.
Right, so you need a distribution center, and WHAM is adamantly opposed to for-profit distribution centers and made sure that the city council's zoning ordinances reflect that prejudice.
Well, now, I would caution against, you know, saying WHAM did this, because, as you say, it may very well have been...
It was Fitzmaurice and Rotkin, but my understanding, talking to Kate Wells...
membership, I don't believe.
All right. I'm talking about the corrals.
Mm-hmm. I think that they're, you know, they're doing a great job. They're human beings. They're like,
sure, they are.
To do things that are not perfect all the time, and it's a hell of a job, but they think they're doing the best they can, and we try to help them, but I certainly appreciate your position, too, that there needs to be a dialogue.
I understand that's actually happening. For example, the Board of Supervisors, Andrea Tischler of the Compassion Flower Inn, says with the new guidelines opening up, that is, say, passed by the City Council, that allow for somewhat more medical marijuana to be grown or possessed per year by patients. They also are now going to turn to the issue of... what do you call it, distribution centers in the county. And that's good, but the problem is the city apparently is a much more favorable place than the county to open distribution centers. So Santa Cruz City needs to address these issues. I mean, if Oakland and San Francisco can allow medical marijuana distribution centers to open across from schools, because they are medical marijuana distribution centers,
true, yeah.
then great liberal progressive Santa Cruz can damn well do the same thing. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah, there should be some.
Sorry to be so cranky.
Hope on that. Okay, one last quick salvo
sure.
over the bow there. I'm going to be performing as Gina Jaguar over at the Jupiter Center this evening. We're having a drag show.
All right.
I hope you can make it at 7:30, but the issue is, I put up posters in all kinds of stores all over town.
Mm-hmm.
The only place that declined was Union Grove.
Really?
I was stunned. I had a poster there with the exact same picture of me for a different event, and they posted it. And this time I went in, and they said, we're going to decline.
Really?
Blew my mind. I just kind of walked out and then thought about it later and went, decline? What for? And something to think about.
Huh. And again, the event is at 7:30, and it is for...
It's a fundraiser for the new teen center.
Huh.
And it'll be a drag show, and I'll be the mistress of ceremonies, Gina Jaguar.
Well, you know, I think Union Grove was trying to be a drag.
You got it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Robert, for all you do.
All right, Ranger Jim.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, I need to go to Sunday school in a bit, so I wonder if you have time for a little few bardic perspectives here. Just a few minutes.
Well, I'll tell you what. Yes, go ahead.
Okay. This is a segment that I'd like to kind of propose every, you know, intermittently whenever I show up. It's called a few bardic views from Santa Cruz. Okay. Someday I hope to have a show of my own, Robert. I hope you're helping to instigate that among the powers that be. Okay, this is stuff that was written during the last Huff meeting last Wednesday, which I was attendant upon, as they say. So these are just kind of random phrases and things that will key you into some of the palaver that ensued among various of us. There must have been 8 or 9 overall throughout the morning, I think, maybe 10, 12. So this will bring up, light up little places in your mind and memory or intrigue you to try to find out more, perhaps. This is the 3rd of November. I wrote the following haiku before I went to the meeting. This is the day after, this is the results, right? The day after the election. Morning glories like red-purple trumpets of doom up the palm tree. Then it becomes a tonka. Soy un hombre sincero donde crece la palma. Baker Square, strategic retreat. Move along, law, Emily Riley, etc. Jason Pascal, Reverend Doctor.
He's leaving town, I understand.
He's leaving? Oh, my. Well, he's
going to Venice, where that thing actually has gotten much worse.
Well, he should move back and forth. I suggest that he establish a yo-yo procedure, which is very important from a bardic standpoint. I mean, to bring the news from that other place and then, back and forth, back and forth. This was the theme of the novel V by Thomas Pynchon, to some extent, between Florida and New York. The guy does a yo-yo. And communication between those two centers is greatly enhanced because there are people like that who go bounce back and forth, back and forth. An even deeper immersion into the Nietzschean, counter to what we might have wished. Time to redesign our bunker stinkers, Robert. Madrigal, from a bardic perspective, bodes well for music. Madrigals. I once began a novel in Fresno, and it was called Joshua Mon Dieu, and it was based in Fresno, and there was a Chicana girls' club there called the Madrigals, spelled like madre, but madre gals, like they're girls who are going to become mothers eventually. Get it? Anyway, Madrigal, from a bardic perspective, bodes well for music. Here's a quote from our friend Robert right here. Hopefully, these clowns are going to get off their carry trips and get back to the real issues. You said that, Robert. Project. This is my project. Organizational diagrams and flowcharts. And that, this is from Robert also, and that requires a whole new re-education process. And then some guy shows up and says, I came for the victory celebration. Kennedy's down, says Robert. And I say, but Maria's still in the State House, or whatever you call it.
Maria.
Maria Shriver in the State House, or whatever you call it in Sacramento.
The governor's wife.
One of my functions is to drag you people from the center every once in a while so you get a little perspective on things. You know,
I understand that. I may have to drag you out of the studio shortly.
Yeah, people CIA, you made them nervous, says Valerie. Develop organizational charts with indications as to dynamic flow, continually involved big pins to catch the winners while still in the glow of their euphoria. He said we should get right going on it, says Valerie. Becky's the parliamentarian, I tell Roger. I'm the grammarian. He thought I was the parliamentarian. No, Becky was the parliamentarian at that meeting. I am the grammarian. There's an important distinction. It has to do with rules of procedure and rules of language. It's a whole big different thing. Have agreed to be test cases. A true Bomalokian, Roger is. That is, a Bomalokian, this is a word I invented, is somebody who's willing to speak up at a formal meeting against the parliamentary principles because he has something to say that needs to be heard. And, you know, the people have voted, but the people, there are some people who want to have a voice as well as a vote. And Bush says, the people have spoken. Well, they spoke with their votes, but now we're going to speak with our voices. And I'm pretty sure that if the voice, the collective voice or the communal voice comes out strongly enough, then it will actually push him to his political doom. And that's what we need to do before another 4 years is up. I will say this over the Internet, because I already said it in my classroom in Montana back on the 21st of March. I mean, if you don't get rid of the guy one way, then you get rid of him another way. This is what is called extra-electoral ideas. Extra-electoral. What is that? Extra-electoral. It means beyond the election. Maybe
we hope you're
side.
Not threatening the life I'm of the president and
anybody.
Crime punishable by up to 10 years in jail and a $10,000 fine.
I'm trying to mobilize the troops, is what I'm, whoever we are, you know. And that the thing is the thing. And if we don't put together something to counterpose against the idiocy that's happening in Washington as its center, we got to build something that's different than that and just show them that it's a better way. And it will just fade away because people will see that that what we're doing is better. So that's what we got to organize, draw charts, make maps, everything. It's kind of a fractal gerrymandering. We are already who we are. We just have to identify who we are and define ourselves as a new nation state. It's that simple. Politics is a myth, and so are national borders, by the way. You put those fences wherever you want, but it's all mythic. You know, it's just what people believe is the case. And when people start to believe otherwise and say so, then the case becomes otherwise. And I'm going to go over to the Greek Orthodox Church right now and for their coffee hour. I almost said happy hour.
My sympathies to the Greek Orthodox Church and my thanks.
Ευχαριστώ, as they say. Yes. And then you say, parakalo, that's thank you, and you're welcome.
And my thanks.
Ευχαριστώ, parakalo.
My thanks to you, Dennis, for being with us on the air. We have a call. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Uncle Robert here.
Hey, Uncle Robert, I just want to alert you to turn up your, when somebody calls in, turn up.
Yes?
Yeah, turn up your volume for the callers.
Right, remember...
I have nothing to say, but the last caller we could barely hear.
Oh, I appreciate that. And actually, if you... Can you hear yourself coming over the air, or I should say coming over the Internet?
I'm not listening on the Internet. I'm listening on the radio.
Oh, well, you know, no, we can't allow that. I have to call the FCC to talk to you about that.
Yeah. So anyway, just if you can control anything, do.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
I appreciate that. So, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, www.freakradio.org, and you can call us at 831-427-3772. You can also get on the chat room at www.pagesincolor.com, and it's good luck to Uncle Dennis, who's leaving the studio. Tio Nicho, as he insists, and that's about it. So, do give a call if you got stuff to say. Had a lot of callers today. I've been talking about the upcoming city council meeting on Tuesday, which, as I mentioned before, it's a one session, a 3 o'clock session. Public comment will be at that session at 3. The items on the agenda that might be of interest that I noticed sort of from a quick look over, there's a cafe extension license fee increase, which has to do with those cafes that take up the sidewalk and actually provide, you know, they're not all bad. There's sort of an interesting aspect to them. I like the cafes in some respects, but insofar as they take away public seating space and hand it over to people only if you pay to sit down to the merchants, there should be some kind of quid pro quo, you know, like a plaza or a park or some kind of deal there. That was the reason why I so strongly opposed the fencing off of the New Leaf Market planter, why I so still maintain a boycott against the Pacific Trading Company and Jackson's Shoes for their support of moving the railing of the planter in front of the Pacific Trading Company to make it impossible to sit down legally there, and their general harassment of street musicians and people on the streets. This cafe extension license fee is going to increase the license fee Let's see, 17 businesses taking advantage of the program, occupying 3,441 square feet currently. Totals $10,299 annually, $5,000 which is paid to the Cooperative Retail Management for the Hospitality Guide Program. Gag me, those are the hosts. Balance of fees goes to a downtown maintenance fund of $5,299. They're going to increase the fee to 35 cents to, essentially they're going to increase it about, looks like, 30 or 40%. And they're increasing money to the downtown maintenance fund. I'm not entirely sure how much they're increasing to the downtown. Yeah, they're adding more money to the downtown maintenance fund. Well, my initial thought on this was to ask them to spend more money because they're taking away more public space and require it to go into a fund that would actually provide new public space. Let's say for the missing benches that are disappearing in front of the Vets Hall and in front of Borders and that disappeared in front of the Pacific Cookie Company. Or possibly require them to... I think the Starbucks, for example, across from the coffee roasting company, has its own space, but they recently took out the wall that people used to sit on there, and now they've got these obnoxious kind of bushy things you can't sit on, specifically to destroy public seating space, because they don't want the undesirable element. In this case, I guess it's motorcyclists hanging out there, which... Much as I dislike motorcyclists running through town with a huge volume revving their way forward, I certainly think they should have the right to cluster and talk and use public spaces. And it seemed to me that was an attack on that community. So on this item 13 on the City Council agenda on the afternoon session on Tuesday, if you happen to be there and you have to pull it off the agenda, it's a consent agenda item, I would say... require a huge amount of money to be paid for these businesses for a much larger fund and require that go into a different fund than the downtown maintenance fund. And I would say defund the hosts. I really think are completely change the hosts. The hosts right now, as I've said repeatedly, are sort of the advanced snitch brigade for the over-amped, hyped-up CSOs, the community service officers, who, such as a Pam Bechtel, who run around giving out tickets for people who sit down downtown and for people who have display devices like a little cup for their, either because they're panhandling or a cup for their musical instrument, as part of the gentrification run 'em off approach, which, although I'm sure that Bechtel would tell you that's not her objective, she is so hot to give tickets out, and this is supported by the downtown hosts, that we have an unfriendly, hostile atmosphere created which serves that effect, which has that impact. It's not what we want in Santa Cruz. We want to go to something else, and it's not going to happen of its own accord, even with the wonderful new Madrigal, Coonerty, Porter, Riley. The potential majority there is Fitzmaurice, Porter, Riley, and Madrigal. And it's not a very strong majority, and it's pretty horrible to even, to contemplate as far as the fact that Porter and Riley gave us a lot of these horrible ordinances, and they're not likely to rescind them, but they're theoretically good on some issues. There's not much happening. There's a municipal code pertaining to the recovery of attorney's fees and nuisance abatements actions. It sounds like it gives the city attorney more money, It's my first reaction. Everybody voted for it last time. Maybe Porter will get the balls not to vote for it this time, but don't hold up your, don't hold your breath. Recovery of attorney's fees and nuisance abatement actions will further the public policy of encouraging the abatement of public nuisances. Now, I'm not sure. Normally, a public nuisance is something like a big pit, like, the Rittenhouse Hole is kind of a public nuisance, but I guess they fenced it off, so they're supposed to have solved that. But they've also used public nuisance laws against poor and homeless people engaging in political protests. It was used against Jerry Henry, the activist street minister. I don't know if he called himself an activist out of the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center in Aptos, who's currently banned from there for conspiracy to buy a cup of coffee. actually for displeasing the management of the coffee roasting company in Aptos. We've talked about this on the air. A lot of this stuff, it would be nice if we could archive, not just the shows are now archived. If you want to hear old Bathrop Spears broadside shows, you can hear them by going to the Huff website, www.huffsantacruz.org. But we're hoping to archive descriptions, not only of the shows, but sort of a description of the incidents that the shows talk about. So if you could say, if you want to hear about this incident, you can go to the following shows, A, B, C, D, and D, and get the kind of the original documented street interviews that refer to the actual incidents. That's a ways off. But if you want to volunteer for Huff, hey, we need help. 423-HUFF, 423-4833. We can use all the volunteers we can get. And also, of course, you can come to the Huff meetings on Wednesday. You heard that rather quixotic description of one bard who wandered into a Huff meeting last Wednesday. I guarantee you they're more coherent than it may sound like in the bard's rendition, although maybe it's a special form of coherence, special inspiration to him. But we meet every Wednesday, 8:30 in the morning at Baker Square. That's at 1107 Ocean in Santa Cruz, and you get free coffee if you can't afford it. And we are working on ending the camping ban, sleeping ban, blanket ban, establishing the Pottinger guidelines. Those are the guidelines that say mandated by the federal courts in Miami, Florida, and actually used elsewhere too, which say you don't even approach a homeless person who's outside for what's called a life-sustaining misdemeanor, something that is a life-sustaining action but is actually a criminal misdemeanor because of the city's gentrification laws or their sense of what their so-called public health and safety is, such as anti-camping law, the city's sleeping ban, public urination and defecation when there's no open bathrooms, laws against public nudity when you're, you know, a homeless person has no option but to take off your clothes, laws against being in a park after dark when that's one of the only choices a person would have where there's some kind of shelter. Anyway, the Pottinger guidelines say a cop can't go up to a homeless person and say, hey, you know, you can't do this, unless they can say, you have a shelter bed or a floor on the place on the floor of a church. That's our shelter bed situation here for most of the year for a very few people. If you can't do that, if the cop can't do that, then they're not allowed to approach the homeless person, except unless they have some other criminal inquiry or that they're interested in engaging in, or unless they're just saying hi, you know. So that's what we're trying to get before the winter season, and we're actually, we have funding for a lawsuit, as I said before, and we're gathering information. If you have a sleeping ban or camping ban or blanket ban ticket, please get in touch with Huff, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Email Becky Johnson. She's doing some of the intake work on this at womanofsteel222. That's all one word, womanofsteel, small letters, numbers, 222, at yahoo.com. And tell her about the situation. She'll meet with you and get the information from you and try to hook you up with the lawsuit. We're trying to get an injunction. I think that's going to be our plan. And again, we're hoping to get the great liberal city council, the left wing of the city council, is there such a thing? The progressive wing of the city council, the Madrigal Porter wing, to over the winter propose at least a suspension of the sleeping ban as Crone and Sugar proposed in 1998 in December of that year, or at least some kind of alternate policy, some kind of alternate shelter, some kind of alternate program that acknowledges the humanity of people and their right to form their own shelter or go to sleep at night after 11 o'clock at night, even if the Downtown Association doesn't like it. So, you can give a call to 427-3772, and while you're rushing to your phone or perhaps going out to take a breath of fresh air, here's a song by Opal's Son, also known as Valerie Christie, who's one of the workers for SAFE and Huff. SAFE is Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, meets every Wednesday. SAFE event number 41 is coming up, and here she sings.
Feel your energy passing on to me, and now I know your music's here in my mind. It sends me, and I feel a glow. inspired, 'cause you're here on this earth, guiding me, you're teaching me to be creative just like you, by having fun with what I do. I don't want to be someone on the outside looking in. Communication dissolves barriers and helps make peace begin. More than a footprint on the sands of time, that's what I'm living for.
And that was Valerie Christie, and a song from her own, I don't think it's a CD, I think it's just a tape, but good voice. We have an incoming call. I want to note also that the City Council, as a final act, as part of its lame duck session, will be proclaiming November 21st through 28th as Bible Week, and encouraging interested citizens to participate in that observance. Let's see what we got on the phone here. Let's check this out. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, Robert. Hi, I called earlier.
Yes.
I wanted to get your take on the election.
You know, I have talked a bit about the election. Why don't I get your take on the election?
All right, my take on the election. I think that Bush has the pulse of the American public in regards to their perceptions of morals. And that is fundamentally why he won. I also think that Bush came across much more polite than Kerry did, and granted he's the incumbent. But in addressing the country after the Osama bin Laden tape was released, for example, he mentioned Kerry's name in a positive light. And the eve before the election, he mentioned Kerry's name in a positive light, how we're both, you know, very anxious, et cetera. I didn't see Kerry display that same civility. I did vote for Kerry, by the way, but I'm not displeased at all with the election results.
Uh-huh. You know, I, of course, didn't vote for Kerry or Bush. I voted for Nader. I don't think it made any difference in California for those Kerry fanatics who are concerned about that. I think...
Why did you vote for Nader?
Because he was the only person, even though his platform was not the ideal one in getting out of Iraq. I think that's the big issue that's going to be confronting us. And I think both of them, both Kerry and Bush, have their heads so far up their asses on Iraq. I'm not polite about this, as you can hear, that, you know, it's killing people every day. It's, of course, it's killed 100,000 Iraqis, according to the John Hopkins University study published last week in The Lancet, the British medical journal. But, of course, it's also killed, what, 1,100 to 1,200 U.S. soldiers as well, if you're only concerned about U.S. soldiers. I think, and, of course, it's it's an illegal criminal war. And neither of them are acknowledging that in any meaningful way or doing anything
about
it.
How do you figure it's illegal and criminal? By what? On what basis do you make that assertion?
Because Saddam Hussein was never a threat to the United States in any meaningful way, any more so than anybody else.
Well, that doesn't mean that it's illegal. Bush went through all the proper motions.
Well, in terms of...
He was signed off by the Congress before an individual American hit the turf.
Hmm. Well,
so
you know,
when you say illegal, what are you talking about?
Well, I disagree with you. I think it violates UN, it violates international law to invade another country that unless you need to defend yourself. I think there's a procedure for it that was not followed. And
well, they went before the UN.
And the UN did not give them.
Your argument might be a morals argument from your perspective, but in the perspective of any legality that's realistic. Bush went through all the motions.
No, the UN did not.
Ducks in a row.
The UN did not authorize the invasion of Iraq. I'm sorry. I don't.
So what? We don't stand and wait for the UN to make authorizations, and nor should we under any conditions or circumstances, in my opinion and others.
Right. Well, I disagree with that. I believe that I don't think one nation should invade another without.
So you believe that the United States of America should surrender its military authority. Powers of initiation to the United Nations.
I don't think the U.S. should ever engage in preemptive war without international sanction. That's correct. I don't know if that's what you're saying. I don't think we should surrender our sovereignty.
That would be very fundamental, and that is where the mainstream, including the representatives of the two major so-called parties, are in disagreement.
Actually, you know, I want to go further than that. I don't have a lot of confidence in the UN either, probably for some of the same reasons you don't. I think...
Well, no, I don't dispute the UN's ability to talk and get involved in peacekeeping and health care, but they will never, in my life, get involved in determining whether the United States has the right to act preemptively. That is the right... The sovereign right of the United States of America remains so and will remain so.
I think you're putting a pretty name on mass murder, and I don't appreciate it, and I think it's an obscenity.
I'm putting a realistic approach towards geopolitics in the world.
Hello? I think you're fading out there, I'm afraid.
Such is really is certainly you have the right to your opinion, but it's right. Not credible in my opinion.
Well, I understand, and I appreciate you have the right to your opinion. It sounds Henry Kissinger-esque to me, I got to tell you. And
well, so, I mean, even if it sounded like whoever, like Ralph Nader, that wouldn't dispute the legitimacy or illegitimacy or sincerity of the that I have.
Oh, I don't know. Kissinger is avoiding war crimes charges at the present time. You know.
Who's got war crimes charges against Henry?
I think it's the International Court of Justice.
I'm not all that convinced that the United States should surrender once again its judicial authority to any international body.
Well, let me ask you this: do you think there are such things as war crimes?
Yes.
So who's going to prosecute a nation engaging in war crimes? That nation itself?
When a war crimes tribunal is established, if you look at what happened after World War II, it was established by who? By the victors.
That's true.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
All right. And that's what gave it legitimacy.
Or some would say illegitimacy.
If you want to claim that some legitimacy becomes because people pronounce it in Brussels, I don't agree with you.
Well,
when and if the actions in Iraq cease, my assumption is there will be a war crimes trial.
I think if the Iraqis win and there's a revolution in the United States, maybe there'll be a war crimes trial against the people who prosecuted the war, but I don't think that's likely. I think you're going to have the same gang or, you know, their brothers and sisters, so to speak, their wealthy compatriots are going to be in power for decades to come, is my concern.
The fact is that poor people and middle-class people choose to elect wealthy people. And that is why the mainstream parties
are headed up almost universally by wealthy people. Those exceptions, like Bill Clinton, have to be very close to the sources of wealth, the Bohemian Grove. They have to be acceptable, or they won't get that far up the food chain.
Well, I think that there is, I don't know if you're saying that, I don't think to say they choose them means to say that presented with a plutocracy's rigged choices, they will choose one or the other.
That's absurd, Robert. That's like saying people don't have the right to change the dial on their TV or their radio.
I don't think
listen to this show, for example. They have the right to vote for Ralph Nader or vote for whoever they want to vote for.
Well,
the fact of the matter is that most people do not identify with those.
No, in many states you didn't have the right to vote for Ralph Nader because the Democratic Party spent more time going after Nader than they did, let's say, trying to put the $20 million into congressional races that they might have actually won. It's kind of ironic, actually.
Well, there is clearly a swing, in my opinion, especially from the moral perspective, towards those candidates that claim to be Republican. They gained seats in both houses.
They did gain seats in both houses.
They held on to the presidency.
That's true.
It's interesting that
it's more than that. I mean,
the early counts after the voting booths closed, both Bush and Kerry thought they were going to win and were going to lose. Bush was prepared to lose. I think it's kind of interesting how it turned out. I think it's interesting that the United States, as big as it is and as populous as it is, can conduct an election with as much clarity as it had.
I think they were meaningless, and they're meaningless distinctions between the candidates.
These issues surface, I think most people are grateful that it didn't turn into a long-winded struggle. But if that would have been the case, I think the nation would have survived it. I think that there's much positive to be said about the way that we conduct our democracy.
I know you do, Bob.
The functions of the republic.
Okay. Anything else?
I voted in the Santa Cruz election for you.
No.
And for Ed Porter.
Huh. Well, I would say...
I think that Ryan Coonerty will probably be an outstanding public official. I didn't vote for him I'm going to call it sidereal reasons. Okay. I think it's interesting that Kennedy was deposed, although I will miss the way that Kennedy used to pronounce the word progressive. I think he had the most outstanding pronunciation of the end-all to be-all term progressive that the Santa Cruz has ever had. Quite quickly going through the list, Riley clearly is very popular. I haven't seen her do anything in 4 years, but that's not what people want. People want they want the course stayed. They don't want a eastern access to UC Santa Cruz. They don't want Highway 1 widened. And Emily will go along with the agenda. Mike Rotkin. Rotkin is about what do the polls say? Mike Rotkin is leadership by polls. So you won't see Mike Rotkin stick his neck out for anything until the city has spent $15,000-$20,000 to conduct a poll.
Well, thank you for the analysis, caller. I appreciate that.
Well, thank you, host. I appreciate you allowing me to get on the air and voice my opinion. You have a great day.
Hey, you too.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And you, too, can get on the air and voice your opinion, 427-3772. A couple comments about the election now that we brought it up. Bush apparently got a higher percentage of the electorate in every category except blacks and Protestants. I don't know if I want to spend a lot of time on the national election at this point because I'm a local guy, but maybe some other people do. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert?
Yeah.
Hi, Robert. This is Neil.
Hey, Neil.
How are you?
I'm good.
That's odd. I'm listening.
Yeah, if you're listening to me on the questionable pirate radio station, which we have nothing to do with, I've got to tell you, it's nothing. We are an internet station, man, and legal as the day is long. You probably have to turn down your radio because there's probably a delay.
Yeah, there was. I just did. I had to respond because, well, you know, because of that silly action we did right after the invasion, remember?
You're one of the notorious Capitola 13.
One of those notorious people, and the last caller was sadly mistaken in several respects, and I just couldn't help it, so here I am calling.
Good for you.
What a mistake.
Capitola 13, of course, were the 13 people who sat in or stood in at the military recruiting station in Capitola, were arrested, and actually we had charges dropped against us by Bob Lee after we pushed the issue.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, I did a little singing in Bob Lee's outer chambers. And
he ran out screaming, all right, all right, I drop everything.
He gave up. He surrendered. Now, maybe that approach should be used at the Pentagon.
There you go. All but it was illegal to invade on several accounts. Firstly, as you said, the U.S. is only allowed by U.N. charter to invade under two circumstances, one of them being if we're in imminent danger, like they're invading us, or it looks like they're about to invade us, neither of which was going to happen. And the Constitution guarantees that any treaty we sign, international treaty, is just as valid as any law passed in the U.S. So we can't break the U.N. Charter just because we feel like Iraq was going to invade us preemptively or anything like that. And secondly, the Security Council, as you said, didn't ratify any invasion. It has to take a Security Council action to ratify the actions of an individual state. We can't just say, Iraq broke the law, so we're going to take matters into our own hands.
Well, also, I mean, realistically, there was lies, deception, exaggerations, misinformation, and a steady drumbeat of hysterical jingoism around the weapons of mass destruction stuff. Which was, supported by Kerry and other candidates and supported by most of the Democrats in Congress and hasn't been really repudiated. There's been no real mea culpas there that I've heard. It's kind of like, Kerry when he gave the great speech before the Senate committee against the war in Vietnam, he never did the personal kind of acceptance and seeking for apology. Mea culpa for killing, murdering, I don't know how many scores of Vietnamese people in his swift boat activities. We didn't see any acknowledgement of that. And there was no threat. People can rationally understand, well, we can't wait for the UN to stop if there's a threat to us, but of course there was no threat. And what really amazes me is that the United States, majority of the United States electorate in this election didn't regard that as the primary issue. I think they did regard, generally, they did regard, even though there was continued confusion on al-Qaeda links with Saddam Hussein, because there weren't not significant links in the way that were proposed by the Bush administration, and 9/11, at least.
Yeah.
But, they did still believe that Bush was mishandling the war. I mean, that... I guess the problem, they usually don't change horses in midstream, perhaps. It's hard to say. There's a lot of ideas about that. But I think the question we have now is, what's next for the Capitola 13, Neil?
Well, I sent you all an email saying, come up on November 3rd in March. I don't know how many of you went. I went up there in San Francisco. There were 5,000 to 10,000 people on the streets. It was completely unreported on the media. I don't know if you know that.
International Answer, yeah, did that. There were, I guess, two gatherings. One was for healthcare in the morning, and then there was for against the war in the evening.
Yeah, I did the evening one.
Well, we down here in Santa Cruz at the SAFE event, I think it was 30, it was 40, we had the vigil against two wars, and we circulated five new petitions urging the Santa Cruz City Council to declare U.S. out of Iraq now, as well as ending the sleeping ban over the winter, reopening medical marijuana distribution centers. We had a big sign, if you're mad and sick and suicidal about the election, come on over here and sign some damn petitions.
Well,
and we actually got a lot of people signing petitions, but nobody volunteered to do anything else.
Yeah.
I'm hoping this is simply post-election shock.
I think so.
To be followed by Kerryites finally saying, whoops, we jumped on the Dean bandwagon, we jumped on the Kucinich bandwagon, then we jumped on the Kerry bandwagon, and we realize ain't no bandwagon, we got to walk ourselves to the fucking, get the damn thing done.
One more thing. I was just speaking about the legalities of the invasion.
Go ahead.
October, I think it was 2002, before we invaded, Congress passed the law that was illegal, that said Reagan could go to war. Bush Freudian slip.
Uh-huh.
Bush could go to war whenever he felt like, and he didn't have to notify Congress. That's illegal.
Right. And you can't. Congress cannot pass on its ability to declare war. It's,
yeah.
It's not allowed the Constitution. Although, in practice, Congress hasn't been declaring war the last, I don't know, how many conflicts the U.S. has gotten into, whether it's Panama or Grenada or Vietnam. There was no congressional declaration of war. There was a Tonkin Gulf declaration. So, you know, I don't even know about Korea, you know. I mean, I think
we're still at war with Korea, North Korea.
Then we, you know, I mean, it's some would say, you know, this is a meaningless legalistic distinction, which doesn't really, you know, Congress passed, for better or worse, this resolution, which illegally, unconstitutionally anyway, gave the power of the, you know, to of war. In essence, it said, go ahead.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, they're in there bombing people that are primarily over Fallujah, women and children. That's what we're finding, or at least civilians. That's the claims of the hospitals. I was listening to a BBC report yesterday, and the claim of the doctor in the Fallujah hospital, I don't know if it was the one that they blew up later that day, they blew up a hospital later that day, yesterday, was that there are no foreign insurgents that have come in as casualties. Now, it could be that they're carrying their own off to the cellars, or it could be the doctor is lying, or maybe he can't identify foreign insurgents. But that's the word from, you know, a medical person inside Fallujah against the massive propaganda that we're hearing moment by moment as they're planning to engage in this massive murder operation. Of course, war is mass murder anyway, but this is... You know, So I am concerned about what we can do here, and if you... You know, I think we need a local action. Maybe I'm just too focused on that. Maybe some would say that. I know that we didn't get... I proposed this to you and others, and I got some kind of minor bites, but nobody really wanted to get together and do much. But I'm ready to. And if anybody out there wants to do some... We have federal property, whether it's the post office, whether it's FAR's office, whether it's the Capitola Recruiting Center again. I don't know. I'm ready to go there.
I'm all with you. I think the man deserves to be impeached and then sent up for an international crimes court, but, you know, will it happen? No. But should we do it? Yes, because we have a moral imperative. We can't just sit around and let our tax dollars be spent for these murderous actions while he lies about it.
No. I mean, no question about it. And the question is, how do we get our city council? Maybe one focus should be on the city council on Tuesday. People can call the city council at 420-5020. Even if you're not in the city of Santa Cruz, if you feel, as a person who uses purchases in the city of Santa Cruz, has some respect for the city of Santa Cruz's progressive positions on other issues, you want them to do what Arcata did, which is demand U.S. withdrawal immediately from the Iraq, even though the Santa Cruz city does not have the power, obviously, to control troops, but it has the power to control investments with military contractors who are over there, with firms that are connected with that. It could declare an amnesty zone. Give a call to 420-5020. That's 420-5020. That's the Santa Cruz City Council's 24-hour line, and say, I want an emergency resolution on the agenda. I want that passed as fast as possible. You know, I don't think it's going to affect Bush with his new election victory, but we are talking about the kind of anti-war movement that hopefully people can now get back to and need to get back to, and a lot of us obviously will get back to. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
Okay, Robert. Well, I'll let somebody else on, and by the way, just like the last caller, I voted for you too.
Oh, well, now we're talking. Hey, that's two more. All right.
I know.
We got only 8,000 more to go.
Well, it's a start.
All right.
Take care.
Hey, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I want all my voters to call in now, every one of you, and we'll get your names. 427-3772 is a phone number. You're tuned to Free Radio. Actually, you're not tuned. Your internet hooked up with Free Radio Santa Cruz at www.freakradio.org. And give a call in if you'd like. I'm going to play now a little something from the last city council meeting, since my name has been bruited about as a candidate. And that was done simply to give people a chance to vote for somebody other than the clowns that are on the council that were on the council, and frankly are mostly still on the council. Here's something at the last oral communications session that talked about the same city issues we're probably going to be talking about day after tomorrow at the next oral communications session. Have a listen.
No, I think it's fine. Nobody else wishes to speak, then you can speak.
This is Mayor Kennedy. I'm going to interrupt this briefly. Kennedy is, according to the First Amendment Coalition, violating the Brown Act by, for example, requiring people who spoke at previous meetings to go to the end of the line. Each meeting, apparently, according to the Brown Act, as the First Amendment Coalition, which is sort of a state watchdog group, is supposed to begin anew. So, for example, Kennedy can't say, oh, I warned you at the last meeting. Now, at this meeting, I'll have you arrested. No, it's at any particular meeting, you have to kind of, you get a clean slate. You get to start again. If you're actually going to charge someone with a crime or you're going to hold them accountable for what you consider to be behavior that requires them being evicted from the meeting, I don't know, like I was evicted for holding up my arm silently in a Heil Mayor salute when they shut off someone else from oral communications inappropriately, then you have to do it only based on that meeting alone. Kennedy created his own rules at the beginning of this year, and there's no indication that Rotkin, the new mayor, will change them, but we'll see. I'm hoping to have a meeting with Fuhrer Rotkin in the days ahead, if he gets appointed mayor. That's, we have appointed mayors in Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz City Council votes in its own mayor, usually the top vote-getter at the last election. Anyway, this is oral communications at the last council meeting in October. Becky Johnson was trying to speak, and actually she asked permission to speak because she didn't want to be harassed, arrested, interrupted, which is often a forlorn hope, or was, at City Council. And Kennedy was telling her, no, you can go speak because nobody else wants to speak, so now we'll let you speak.
Thank you, Mayor Scott Kennedy, for limiting oral communications to 30 minutes for a period of 35 days. And also it's in the time period right before a City Council election where Mayor Kennedy is a candidate. And since the mayor controls the agenda, this one's all yours, Mayor. Let me remind the council that how one acts is more important than what one says. For instance, in this upcoming city council race, the incumbents say they are for affordable housing, and yet they've abandoned the Deanza, the seniors at the Deanza Mobile Home Park and the laborers at Clearview Court, right when it meant the most. So that's a loss of 263 units of affordable housing, all just because we lost the nerve. The incumbents point out that this new, almost but not quite yet open, homeless family shelter is proof of your concern for the plight for the homeless. But at the same time, you are spending our money showing how compassionate you are, and you're spending even more money to cite and arrest and jail homeless people for sitting and begging, for crossing the street, for holding up a sign, for covering up with a blanket to keep warm. Please remember, Municipal Code 6.36.010 still makes the act of sleeping a crime itself in the city of Santa Cruz. And all four of the incumbents support this law. It's just fine from where you sit that we keep this law in place. Even though the National Coalition on the Homeless, in their recent survey, came out that it probably costs us about $1,000 for every citation you write. $1,000 for writing a citation to a homeless person for asking for spare change in a group of two. Now, those people who are watching at home might wonder why I'm being so shrill about this and so many times. But with these torrential rains that we're having, remind people the armory is not open. And so these people, if they shelter themselves from the rain, they're breaking the law. And you think that's just fine. I don't think you deserve 4 more years.
Thank you very much. Next speaker, please.
Bernard Klitzner, member of the Human Rights Group, HUF Group. And I came here tonight to talk to you about legalizing sleep, known as the sleeping ban, and then also like the blanket ban, covering up begging and sitting, all those kinds of laws that you continually make against poor people and have poor people's laws, you know. So how many of you, you know, think that people, you know, should be criminalized for sleeping in a public place if they can't afford the rent system? Come on, how many of you think that right now on the console? Come on, you can raise your hands and let the people know. Well, not even one will even whisper against this hidden topic, you know. What about, you know, don't you think that people should be able to cover up at night at least the blankets? You know, have them to keep them warm. You know, how many of you, you know, think that? Don't you think they should be able, you know, to have a blanket? Come on, give me an answer. No, what a bunch. You know, it's incredible. I hope you, the public up there, you know, might want to replace these people that just want to criminalize the poorest of them all, you know. A few of them, even on the console, have even made promises to certain groups, you know, that they would overturn this sleeping ban, you know, and they really put it up on the agenda, but nope, not at all. You know, they know who's sitting there. Made these little promises. Even one of them made the promise about 9 years ago. He still hasn't done it. Okay. Bye-bye. Maybe you'll change it soon if we keep, you know, after you. I don't see anything that we can do. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Write in Robert Norris and Coral Broom for City Council next week, November 2nd. We have another disastrous election coming up. Nationally, we get war in Iraq. No matter how we vote locally, we get war against the poor. Freezing rain outside, business as usual inside. Mayor Kennedy and the rest are pushing for another go at us. The Kennedy Council has given us no meaningful expansion of emergency shelter, no real rent control, and no civil liberties protections for the poor. Instead, six-story parking lots, $26 million hotel developments, loser, Blue Lagoon-type, Verisony lawsuits, and more Seaside Company giveaways. The De Anza and Clearview Court tenants are the latest collateral damage. Kennedy said he abandoned the voter-endorsed right to have unfluoridated water. Vote Norris and Broom. When the incumbents return, we get more rubber stamping of City Manager for Life Dick Wilson and City Attorney John Verisony. The Kennedy Council has buried the U.S. out of Iraq resolution passed by the Arcata City Council, but dead on arrival here in Santa Cruz. This, as the American dead, the Santa Cruz County dead, return in coffins here. Throw out the incumbents. Vote Norris and Broom. For a full analysis, check out santacruz.indymedia.org or tune into the web, free radio at www.freakradio.org. A renegade group calling itself Scram is now broadcasting free radio on 101.1 FM, so it's back on the air that way. There's a glimmer of hope. Another homeless death, Scotty, was reportedly turned away from Dominican, according to his grim-faced campmate some weeks ago, and died outside. It's clear to anyone that the homeless death toll will be lessened, as it was in 1995, by allowing homeless people to have a campground such as the Coral Street Open Air Shelter in that year, instead of playing politics of fear, as Rotkin and Kennedy habitually do with the homeless issue. Throw out the incumbents. Vote Norris and Broom. With the council suborned or indifferent, we are forced to use lawsuits and protests and tent cities like those in Portland, Oregon, Seattle, Washington, now in Springfield, Massachusetts. tenants, poor folks, longtime Santa Cruzans who can't afford the rent, hyperinflation, will be sacrificed to lure those with money as the town further gentrifies under these incumbents. Tonight, as I wearily restate at each oral communications session, there is space for 40 of the city's 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people outside. 1,500, thank you. 1,500 to 2,000. Fancy consultants get paid tens of thousands of dollars, and the police retire on fat pensions. Public buildings, public property, public space are all denied to those who need to sleep. This has to end. This room is out of the rain. There's a bench right here. Why not begin tonight to use unused shelter space and save lives? I think I will. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anybody else?
And that was the last city council meeting. The next one is coming up in 2 days. There's also an opportunity to meet with the Citizens Police Review Board auditor. He's the person who replaces the Santa Cruz Citizens Police Review Board that was killed by the city council about, a year and a half ago. And I'm looking to find out the exact time he's reachable. Trying to see if he's on the city website. And it is Monday. It's the second and fourth Mondays of every month. And it might be under advisory bodies. Let's see. He might not even be on the city website, interestingly enough. Let's see. City clerk, police department. Let's look under police department. Might be something there. Nothing yet. Let's take another look. If anybody's interested in getting more information about this, I will have that information probably hopefully later in the show. So you can call in and talk about that. I'm also going to be talking shortly again, actually playing some tapes around police abuse in Santa Cruz. That's not abuse of the police, but abuse by the police. But first, let's have a little music.
I love this loft. I'll take it.
Welcome home, Agnes.
Just look at the people out in the street, not sitting in cars. They're moving their feet to different drummers and different beats. This place is so cool, I feel the heat. And this is the place I be. Look at that Chevy, must be older than me. At the top of that building, it says 1903. I can feel the people who lived here before. I love what I see and I want to see more.
And that was City for Sale by the San Francisco Mime Troupe, or at least a song from that album. On the line with us is Hale and Hardy Hale. Hi, Hale.
Hi, Robert.
I think we can hear you. I've got to turn up the sound and make sure we can hear you.
Okay.
Had a caller complain, and thank you, caller, for calling in to let us know about that. Hale, you called me a few, about a week ago, and then we talked on the street at the SAFE event, the Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, in front of the New Leaf Market street performers.
That's right, yeah.
And you mentioned you had rather unsatisfactory experience with the police department. I guess it was with the Rangers regarding two parking tickets and then going to court in the courtroom of referee Kim Basket, which I encourage people to avoid at all costs by disqualifying the referee. I guess you got tickets for, one was for backing into a parking space near the town clock, backing up too far.
Yeah, well, actually, the violation was unsafe backing on a highway, and I was merely parallel parking there. She said I backed up. She measured it after I left, you know, and after she wrote me up and claimed it was 140 feet or six parking spaces. And in the statute, the vehicle code, referee Basket would not allow me to even read the vehicle code. And I just felt unable to adequately defend myself in the courtroom.
Now, she wouldn't allow you to read the vehicle code?
Yeah,
Now, of course, you're expected to read the, I mean, you had read it before and brought it into court, or she wouldn't let... So what happened? You attempted to read the vehicle code, and what did she say?
Well, actually, she told me I could cross-examine the young lady police officer that was in the courtroom. And I wasn't really prepared, you know. I didn't know that was... I've never had to do that before. But she said, you can ask her as many questions as you want, and if you do it right, you won't have to say anything on your own behalf, you know, if you ask all the right questions.
Yep.
So I told her, I said, well, gee, I'm not a lawyer, but I'll do the best I can. And I felt pretty kind of intimidated, you know, in a room full of police officers.
Yeah, that's the downtown, downstairs courtroom in the county building. It's it's got usually a whole half the room is filled up with police officers, the other half with their victims.
Yeah, exactly.
Now did you cross-examine the police officer?
I did, to an extent. I mean, I felt, as I said, I just felt a bit intimidated just by the circumstances and the attitude. I don't know, it just felt like I was definitely on the defensive. I felt really on the defensive and pressured a lot. But
now, the usual procedure, of course, it's a difficult situation. What you do is, if you're acting as your own attorney, you cross-examine the other person, the officer, the complaining officer, and then you're allowed to cross-examine yourself, which usually means you present yourself as a witness and you make a statement, usually an oral narrative, and then you can make closing arguments as your own attorney. During the statement, however, where you're presenting yourself, you certainly have the right to read the code statute. Did she deny you that right?
Yeah, well, she just said, well, we're running out of time, so, you know, and then the most important question in my cross-examination of the officer, and one of the only questions I actually asked her was this, that I said, well, as I was backing to this parking space, I said, were there any cars approaching me, any vehicles, any automotive vehicles, any bicyclists or pedestrians approaching me as I was backing? And she wouldn't answer that directly. She just said, well, there was a bicyclist. She paused, and then she said, there was a bicyclist proceeding through the crosswalk southbound. So she wouldn't really give a yes or no.
Well, was the crosswalk anywhere near where you were backing?
It was kind of near, but it was tangential to the direction. to the parking
space. Where? What street was this on?
I was on Water Street heading toward Ocean, right at Pacific Avenue by the clock tower. And I was parking to go into the post office to mail a letter.
I see. So you're parking on the side of that's the ocean side of that, of the, I should say, the Water Street area.
Yes.
And so anyway, what happened in court after when you were told you didn't shouldn't have enough time to hear you read the law?
Yeah. Then, what I was trying to get to was have her acknowledge whether or not. Even when she mentioned this bicyclist, she gave the impression or implied that this bicyclist was coming toward me, or that I was backing up. And as this bicyclist was approaching me, when in reality the bicyclist was heading down Pacific Avenue, which I guess is.
How far were you from the bicyclist?
Oh, probably about 15 or 20 feet, but I mean, I was backing up, a mile an hour. I mean, it's just barely moving, and there was no one approaching me, no traffic in the area whatsoever.
What fine were you assessed when she found you guilty?
She fined me $161 and 2 points on my driving record.
And what was your response to this?
Well, yeah, at that point I got upset when she said, as soon as she said that this bicyclist was traveling southbound, implying that I was a direct threat to this bicyclist, and had I just pulled up next to the car in front of this parking space and backed up less, it would have never been an issue. But for some reason, and when she would not allow me to read the vehicle code or proceed any further in my defense, I just said, look, I said, as far as I'm concerned, you're nothing but a glorified tax collector for the city.
And what did she say then?
And she said, well, she asked this officer to escort Mr. Aquarian out of the courtroom immediately. And then I was on my way out. I just said something like, this is a kangaroo court, or something to that effect.
Did you get any applause from the other side of the court? Now, you actually had another ticket, too, that you were in court for. What was that?
The other one is the other citation was a couple months prior that I was in the appeal stage with. And that was pausing out by the lighthouse in this blue zone, which is a handicap zone.
Now, you didn't have a handicap sticker at the time, or placard at the time, but you found out later that you were, in fact, handicapped because of a knee surgery and a back injury, and you brought that evidence to the court. You later had a placard, but they wouldn't honor that?
Yeah, when I went to the personal hearing in this annex building in front of the courthouse about a week ago, this young girl who was the referee, she seemed rather prejudicial, just as referee Baskin, I felt, was.
This is sort of a more civil, meaning not criminal, but civil parking ticket deal, which is different than the moving violation ticket you got in the other situation.
Uh-huh. And this referee was in there, and she was very busy. No one even thought she was the referee. We were all expecting a male or someone who looked more like a judge or something.
Yeah, your sexism is showing. Go ahead.
Pardon?
Your sexism is showing.
It is.
They actually have women who are judges these days.
Well, I mean, it was, she wasn't dressed in a gown or anything. She was sitting next to where the main seating area where you would expect someone, official person, to be seated. She gave the impression of being more like a secretary. I was there with three other people. We each had their own case, and they were. But anyway, that's kind of peripheral.
So how did the actual hearing go? What I have never been to an appeal of a parking ticket, which doesn't take place in the courtroom, right? It took place elsewhere in
it
sort of an administrative
building, right out front on the ocean I'm sorry, on the Water Street side of the courthouse.
Go ahead.
And so anyway, I appeared before this woman, and she asked me a couple questions. Mainly, did I leave my vehicle? The most important first question was I in fact in this diagonal loading zone? Oh, which I said, yes, I was. And then was I in or out of the vehicle, or did I leave the vehicle? I said, yes, momentarily. And then she said, well, there's not really any point in proceeding further because there's nothing else you could say that will affect the outcome. You know, so I said, well, I guess there wasn't really, I'm not sure what the point was in even having this hearing then.
Had you pointed out, Hale, that you were now the possessor of it, that you were disabled throughout the period of time?
No, I wasn't even able to bring anything forward at that point. She just said, well, whatever, anything else that you say is consequential, so I would say.
It's really important and often very difficult to assert yourself at these kinds of hearings, but you often have to. As Uncle Dennis here was in the studio, our Bard commentator told us, you sometimes have to break through the mass of bureaucratic or parliamentary strictures that hold you and say, wait a minute, you know, I have information that I was disabled at the time. I want to be able to present it, even as she says, you know, it's...
Well, I realize now I should have been more...
Right, I'm not criticizing you. I'm saying that this is something we all have to understand, that under the circumstances, when you're in, you know, a hall of justice, when you're in a police station, when you're in a doctor's office, you're often intimidated by the idea that here are these highly qualified professionals and you really have to be careful to follow their procedures which often are very new to you, and you're kind of hoping that they'll help you along and treat you fairly, often a forlorn hope. You know, you need, in essence, to cut to the quick of the issue, and sometimes to do that, well, usually to do that, it's helpful to have a second person with you who's a friend. The first rule is don't go into a doctor's office, an attorney's office, or a courtroom if you are, you know, the person involved, or an administrative hearing alone. Always have somebody with you. And also have a tape recorder with you. That's a good idea.
I didn't know if you could even bring a tape recorder.
You could bring a tape recorder. There have been some, that's another account against referee Basket. She apparently did not allow someone to tape record or even apply to tape record. There's a procedure you have to follow when you go into a criminal court hearing, which a moving violation is a criminal court hearing, and so is a parking ticket violation, however, is not. But it's a public hearing. It's open to the public, and you have a right to record it. The problem they have in courts are that they claim that they need to have a certified record. And they'll say, you can just hire a record keeper, which is even as you pay the court reporter some huge amount of money to do that. Or you ask, you know, you claim to be indigent, and you try to go through the policies for getting it that way, which often they don't make. Most infractions, they will not make a record of what goes on. So your tape recording could be the only record if you appeal the case. So it's really important to insist on that. And, of course, then you run into problems because they have these armed thugs that they call bailiffs who will escort you here and there, threaten you, and so forth. This, of course, is hardly a police state. We know that. It's a fine democratic system where everybody gets what they need, or at least if they don't, they have only themselves to blame. Right. So, Hale, anything else? What was the outcome of this administrative hearing? You just what did they sock you with?
She just sent me this little letter, which I received, I believe, 2 days ago. And it was pretty much, she indicated that although she wasn't able to give us a decision on that evening of the hearing, it was going to be mailed to us. She did acknowledge that virtually. She had these narrow parameters with which to make her decision, and nothing I said was really going to make any difference.
It seemed to me there would be a key importance if you are actually disabled, but you didn't have the disabled placard.
That's what I would certainly think.
And I would encourage you to find out if there's I think you can appeal from her into action into an actual judicial court, into a.
Now there is a avenue for a to appeal it, which I intend to do, but they want a $25 fee.
Time-consuming and costly. It's really a pain in the ass. And
yeah, to appear before a real judge, and then initially they're saying all that means is I'll be appearing before Referee Basket.
Right. What you need to do is...
And then I'd have to disqualify her to
right.
appear before him.
Right. Then you get Almquist or Barton, you know, gag me. But I would say proceed with that if you have the funds, interest, and time. If you don't, join Court Watch, which is a group that the Huff Homeless United for Friendship Freedom group is forming to essentially inform people outside the courts of their rights and to get their experiences so we can, in essence, start talking back to the court system and instead of, you know, simply being
victims.
You know, little, you know, cash machines for, are just essentially, as you say, victims in this situation. Is that what... That's what a lot of us are reduced to. But I think, you know, if you get together, there's a way of standing up and saying no and certainly informing others about their rights and options. So
was able, after this woman referee heard the other three people that were there, I had to wait about an hour. Then I went back in, and finally she softened a little and listened to... Let me state that I was able to show her my handicap placard, and I mentioned a couple of things, such as the reality that I had a minor, stuff that pertained to this handicap status.
Did she annul the ticket, or did she reduce the fine?
No, she said that wouldn't have a bearing on it anyway. She said, all I can do is pray for you.
That's very sweet. Sort of the faith-based approach. Why don't you tell her to pay for you? Whip out her wallet and pay. Pray, but pay. Anyway, Hale, thank you for calling in.
Hey, you're very welcome. Thanks for the opportunity.
Sure. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Robert Norse, and this is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. We have another hour left in the show. We're going to play a bit of... some actual street interviews. What a concept. I've been promising that. Now you're going to get it.
Carolyn Newman.
Carolyn, are you a working downtown, playing downtown, studenting? What are you doing?
I'm working downtown.
What kind of work do you do?
I'm a receptionist at Planned Parenthood.
And I just handed you one of my flyers, vote for Norris and Brune. Why would you vote for a weird character in a big black hat?
Santa Cruz needs more weird characters and black hats.
Is Planned Parenthood unionized?
You know, I don't know. I've just started working there.
Yeah, that was an issue. Cynthia Matthews was criticized for somehow blocking a union some years ago.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything about a union, so chances are we aren't.
You could be the big organizer.
I could be.
What kind of problems do you feel... should be addressed most immediately
in Santa Cruz?
Yes, in terms of the shitty city council. Go ahead.
I don't know where to start.
Just grab one.
Okay. Better bike paths. It's a big thing for me.
You've been hassled by police at all, or for biking the wrong way, anything of that sort?
Once on Pacific, but it wasn't, you know, told me to get off my bike and walk it, so I did, you know. But yeah, I'd love to be able to ride down Pacific without having to go on the side streets or get off my bike.
Is that a problem? Is you think Santa Cruz is over-policed, or is that what some of us paranoid characters wearing warning police and area T-shirts are simply pushing on the rest of it?
I think certain areas of Santa Cruz are over-policed. I wouldn't say all of them, but definitely there's areas.
How many jobs do you have to work to pay rent?
Right now I'm working one. Before this job I was working 2.5, so I haven't quite figured out if this new job will be enough to pay for my expenses, but we'll see in a month or so.
Do you live alone or with someone else?
I share a house with a couple of friends.
And does that enable you to essentially pay the rent?
Yeah, it's pricey though. It takes up a big chunk of my paycheck every month.
There are jobs for women like yourself in Iraq. Fine, well-paying jobs. Have you considered moving over there and, shall we say, eliminating some of the opposition and fighting the good fight against the war on terrorism?
I have to admit, I've never considered going to Iraq.
You've got to expand your horizons. That's the problem with you so-called liberal Santa Cruzans. You lack a true perspective on real opportunities. We've been talking with
Carolyn.
Thanks, Carolyn. We're talking with
Layla.
And some more interviews in just a moment. Here's a little more from City for Sale.
A funky corner store. I walked in and what I saw, it knocked me to the floor. Lots of jars full of cigars at $30 each. A neon sign imported wine and microbrewery cheese. And there's no more single cigarettes and no more bargain here. The writing's on the wall, my friends, the end is drawing near. SUVs are everywhere, old trucks cannot be found. This is not the place where I grew up, I don't know my own hometown. You can look and you can see it, you can watch the city die. Changing shots and losses, it's enough to make you cry. Where once there was a mural, there's a nice designer. The city that I knew is gone, this city is for sale. Apartments, farms, and condos, they burn down. It's full of rocks at the mountaintop and clouds go rolling by. Got out my cuisine, I saw limousines and it's full of guys in high. Just look and you can see it, you can watch the city die. Save you got your losses, it's enough to make you cry. Where once there was a mural, there's a mad design of hell. The city that I knew is gone, the city is for sale. Apartments, farms, and condos, they burned down cheap hotels.
We believe,
yes, we believe.
Well, well.
No more loss.
No more loss.
No more loss. No more loss. No more loss. No more loss. No more loss. No more loss. No more loss. No more loss. No more loss. No more loss. No more loss. No more loss. No more loss.
And that was City for Sale, of course, about the gentrification of San Francisco.
My mind.
So it's about 15 to 9 in the morning on election day, November 2nd, 2004. I'm out here on the wharf talking with Valerie Christie, who is out on Halloween evening, and she saw some interesting things on Pacific Avenue. Valerie, what did you note out there?
Well, I noticed that it was really, really crowded. And they blocked the streets this time this year. And they put up these big, huge towers, big, tall towers with really bright lights shining down so they could keep an eye on the crowd. So that was kind of unusual. Usually it was not that crowded, too. It was probably the most crowded I've ever seen it.
How many towers were there?
Three. There was one down by Cathcart. There was one on the corner of SoCal and Pacific, down by New Leaf. And then there was another one way up by Bookshop Santa Cruz.
Was there much police present?
Oh, yeah. There's lots. And they were standing in front of the, next to the towers. There was someone watching over the towers. And there were also people dressed in Halloween costumes who looked like they were wearing real uniforms. They look like real cops.
Did you see anything about the police behavior that concerned you? Did you feel reassured that they were there? How did you feel about them?
Oh, it was no big deal. They were just there. They weren't doing anything. It was a little bit surprising to see that they had to put the big bright lights. I thought that that was kind of unusual. But it was so packed that, I don't know, it was just kind of eerie because it was so, everybody was so packed in. I'd never seen it like that before.
The Sentinel estimated 20,000 people a day or two later.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a caller. Hi, caller.
Hi there, Robert.
Hey there.
I'm Broderick.
Hey, Broderick.
I talked to you years ago when you were down on Marshall Street for a very short time, if you were there then.
Possibly.
Everybody's wringing their hands about doing something, and everybody's a little depressed who did vote about the voting. It was stolen, no doubt about it, but there's somebody that's doing something about it. And I'll slowly give the address if people can get their pens ready to write. This organization is up in Seattle, apparently, but I think they have places all over, and they are going to challenge, under the Freedom of Information Act, 34 different states to produce the results of their voting machines, especially in places where the machines messed up or they were thought to have messed up with giving large numbers of votes, even over the amount of votes that people were registered to vote in precincts and stuff like that. And they're doing it right now, and they need our support.
Okay.
So if everybody's ready to write, it's all one word on the Internet, but you don't have to go to the Internet, but it's blackboxvoting.org. Or just Black Box Voting, P.O. Box 2552, Seattle, Washington, P.O. Box 25552, Seattle, Washington. The zip is 98165.
That's 2552 or 552?
It's 2552, but there's a 2 in the front also.
So it's 2552.
2552, correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's a little hard to deal with. I had trouble with it, too.
Okay.
And if you'll just put a stamp on an envelope and address it and send it to them with $1 or $5 or anything else, if you've got more in the genes than that, it will help these people do this all over the country and trace these votes out that were stolen, especially states like Ohio and Florida, which have a just a huge amount of number of different things that happen. You couldn't possibly know if you're in Santa Cruz unless you listen to Air America radio.
It's interesting that Kerry, surrendered so quickly instead of fulfilling his promise to wait until the votes were cast or counted.
And there was also a different tone of it between Kerry and Edwards and the way they spoke. I was really disappointed, and I figure everybody else was too. But this is going to go through and say, okay, by law, they have a right to count all the provisional ballots. That's by federal law. And they should, by their own laws, count the absentee ballots in full. And they should resolve any irregularities that have been brought to their attention. And by they, I mean every single county in this 34-state block. And these folks are well on the way. And they've got lawyers, and they're going to do it. So we might find out some interesting news. Now, I'm not sure what all that's going to do, but it might do something. For those that are interested in national, international things, of course, I do recommend AirAmericaRadio.com on the Internet. And also, of course, you guys know Amy Goodman, democracynow.org. And also, if I may tip the hat while I'm doing it, to Ray Taliaferro and Bernie Ward on KGO. They are on the Internet, and they have a new Internet set up for either Windows Media or Real Player. And they are on the weekdays after 10 o'clock at night on KGO. So there's also a fellow named Tom Hartman up in Vermont. And he can be located through commondreams.com.
Hey.
And Mike Malloy at AirAmericaRadio.com, who's on at 7 o'clock our time, 10 o'clock our time, from Atlanta. He's a pretty long-term dude that really knows what's going on. But, of course, I do understand that you folks are more interested in the local issues. And just one last thing to tell you. I'm the guy that took all the heat for your station when it was over on Columbia, and I was one block behind them there and got really treated badly by my neighbors and all kinds of pressure because I had a ham antenna up.
Wow. Well, sorry about that.
It was not a... I even had people who supported free radio calling it harassing me. And I... For some strange reason. So I do listen, and I'm not well, so I'm kind of just doing my own thing. But I hope some of this might cheer somebody up and give them some other ideas and maybe give some... a broader range, because I listened to some of the stuff on Talk of the Bay, and I don't find people to be very well educated in this town. Is it just my thinking? Oh, and one more thing I have a question. You mentioned the BBC. Do you see them drifting to the right like I do? I've been listening for 10 years.
I have only followed them a little bit. I generally go to them looking for updates on Iraq, and I refer to them to it, along with a number of other sources. I can't really say. I don't usually find them the best, most extensive source. I look for, I go to www.empirenotes, I go to www.counterpunch, I go to, which is left-wing commentary, but also has some interesting references. I go to www.juancole.org. He's got a lot of information on Iraq, which I find.
Is that
J-U-A-N? Yes, it is. Yeah, he's quite.
Dot.
I believe so. I could be wrong.
I could Google it or something. But anyway,
yeah.
I just wanted to tell you I'm so glad that these lawbreakers have you on the radio. I had to move out into the county, and it just broke my heart. And I almost went homeless. And I really know and feel for people who are homeless. I'm just broke. I can hardly pay my bills.
Well, you're still out there trying, Broderick, and I appreciate hearing from you. And you know, keep calling in, and we'll keep talking.
We will, and when we get some extra money in the jeans, we'll send it to your post office box.
Yeah, well, make sure you feed yourself first.
I'm glad you're on there. I was worried that you might not be, but I'm glad you're on there and hitting away. And that's what we all got to join forces. Let me tell you, it doesn't matter. At least to my view, it doesn't matter if you're an independent or if you're a Democrat or a hard Democrat or if you're someone who considers yourself progressive. Regardless of where you are on the spectrum, this thing is going to be so bad under Bush that we are going to absolutely have to join forces in some way. So, and one way is to listen to each other's media, which is everybody else's. One more thing about Air America Radio, they had us slated for a Santa Cruz station called KTEE, KT, and KT is listed as a license up in Felton. If anybody knows about that, I'd sure like them to call in and tell me what that was all about. It never went on the air. It stayed listed for several months, and we never got a station here. So maybe people want to call in them about that. We could get somebody carry at least part-time, either from Monterey or from...
That's KP, K-P-E-E?
No, T as in Tom, E-E. Like the T's out there in the wilderness somebody was talking about.
KT, I got you.
I don't think they have golf balls, though.
Okay, well, I'm not teed off, but I'm going to tee off. So.
All right. Real great, Robert.
Thanks, Broderick.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. This is the last hour of Bathurst Spears Broadsides. Like I've got a dozen articles on the election that I was thinking of reading, but I just want to go back to what's really going on, which is Fallujah and the planned assault there. There's an article I'm going to read now from a fellow named Rahul Mahajan. It's called Fallujah and the Reality of War. And it reads as follows. The assault on Fallujah has started. It is being sold as the liberation of the people of Fallujah. It's being sold as a necessary step to implementing, quote, democracy in Iraq. These are lies. I was in Fallujah during the siege in April, and I want to paint for you a word picture of what such an assault means. Fallujah is dry and hot. Like Southern California, it has been made an agricultural area only by virtue of extensive irrigation. It has been known for years as a particularly devout city. People call it the City of 1,000 Mosques. In the mid-90s, when Saddam wanted his name to be added to the call to prayer, the imams of Fallujah refused. U.S. forces bombed the power plant at the beginning of the assault. This is the assault in April. For the next several weeks, Fallujah was a blacked-out town with light provided by generators only in critical places like mosques and clinics. The town was placed under siege. The ban on bringing in food, medicine, and other basic items was broken only when Iraqis en masse challenged the roadblocks. The atmosphere was one of pervasive fear from bombing and the threat of more bombing. Non-combatants and families with sick people, the elderly and children, were leaving in droves. After initial instances in which people were prevented from leaving, U.S. forces began allowing everyone to leave except for what they called military-age males, men usually between 15 and 60. Keeping non-combatants from leaving a place under bombardment is a violation of the laws of war. Of course, if you assume that every military-age male is an enemy, there can be no better sign that you are in the wrong country and that, in fact, your war is on the people, not on their oppression, not a war of liberation. The main hospital in Fallujah is across the Euphrates from the bulk of the town. Right at the beginning, the Americans shut down the main bridge, cutting off the hospital from the town. Doctors who wanted to treat patients had to leave the hospital with only the equipment they could carry and set up in makeshift clinics all over the city. The one I stayed at had been a neighborhood clinic with one room that had four beds and no operating theater. Doctors rain. Another clinic, I'm told, had been an auto repair shop. This hospital closing, not the only such that I documented in Iraq, also violates the Geneva Convention. In Fallujah, you were rarely free of the sound of artillery booming in the background, punctuated by the smaller, higher-pitched notes of the Mujahideen's handheld mortars. After even a few minutes of it, you have to stop and pay attention to it, and yet, of course, you never quite stop. Even today, when I hear the roar of thunder, I'm often transported instantly to April 10th and the dusty streets of Fallujah. In addition to the artillery and the warplanes dropping 500, 1,000, and 2,000-pound bombs and the murderous AC-130 Spectre gunships that can demolish a whole city block in less than a minute, the Marines had snipers crisscrossing the whole town. For weeks, Fallujah was a series of sometimes mutually inaccessible pockets, divided by the no-man's land of sniper fire paths. Snipers fired indiscriminately, usually at whatever moved. Of 20 people I saw come into the clinic, I observed in a few hours only 5 were military-age males. I saw old women, old men, a child of 10.